springtime air. And Mumy and Leonard and Sarah Jane Olson took a walk in Tompkins Square. And they talked about what they...
This is the Quality News Network. Israel has approved an expanded offensive in southern Lebanon. Explosions were heard hours later, but Israeli officials deny the strikes were part of the campaign. Meanwhile, the U.S. is urging Israel to exercise caution, saying it does not want the war to escalate. The Israeli military says about 10,000 troops are now at the border while hundreds of tanks and troops moved into Lebanon. Today, Hezbollah fired more than 130 rockets into Israel as Israeli jets continued to bomb Lebanon. 15 Israelis were killed in today's fighting, the deadliest single day for Israel since the war began. At the UN, diplomats are discussing different versions of a draft resolution for a ceasefire. A vote could come tomorrow. Qatar, the only Arab nation on the Security Council, warns that a non-enforceable resolution could result in a Lebanese civil war. In Iraq today, three U.S. soldiers were killed in combat in the Anbar province, and divers are searching for two American soldiers who have been missing since their Black Hawk helicopter crashed in the province earlier. The other four crew members were rescued and are in stable condition. Also in Iraq, four Iraqi men have been arrested in the kidnapping of American journalist Jill Carroll. She was released in March after 82 days in captivity. In Afghanistan today, 19 suspected Taliban militants were killed in an attack on an American base in the eastern part of the country. In the south, suspected rebels hung a 70-year-old woman and her son from a tree on suspicions they were government spies. Authorities say 3 of 11 missing Egyptian students have been found. The search continues for the other 8. The students were among a group of 17 Egyptians who arrived in New York at the end of July. In Washington, a 21-year-old Navy sailor has been charged with spying for Russia. He already faces espionage and desertion charges and is now accused of trying to give classified information to foreign agents on 3 separate occasions. In Mexico, a partial recount of last month's presidential election is now underway, but supporters of the losing candidate want a full recount. Today, his supporters continued their protest by blocking the offices of 3 foreign-owned banks. In North Korea, officials are asking South Korea for aid, including food, blankets, and medical supplies. Flooding in the north left more than 500 people dead and nearly 300 missing. You're listening to the Quality News Network. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour. Business news is next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to RightCarRightPrice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to RightCarRightPrice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
The Humane Society has offered to give $100,000 to China to vaccinate dogs. That comes after reports that Chinese authorities have slaughtered tens of thousands of dogs because of the disease. A growing labor shortage in China could spell trouble for U.S. retailers this holiday season. Trade groups say China produces more than 90% of the world's toys, 53% of all footwear, and 50% of all clothing. Mexicans may soon be able to take out home loans while shopping for lawn chairs and other goods. Walmart de Mexico has filed for a retail banking license with plans to cater to their mainly low-income clients. U.S. mortgage applications rose 4.9% last week from the previous week's 4-year low. The Mortgage Bankers Association says long-term home loan interest rates fell to their lowest levels in 5 months. Toll Brothers' third quarter sales dropped as the housing market continued its downward trend. The Disney Company reports higher third quarter revenue and profits with a net income of $1.1 billion. Gains were reported in all divisions, including its movie studio. Adidas' second quarter net profit rose 24% thanks to the World Cup soccer championships. The sporting goods company also expects its full-year forecast to rise. Light sweet crude settled today at $76.35. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 97 points, NASDAQ down 1, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Feel like Rip Van Winkle. This should be Monday. But it's not. It feels like it to me. God only knows what I'm going to be doing on Saturday and Sunday. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the program, one and all. Tickled to death to be with you after my little hiatus. You know, there was some business stuff. You know, it's not all glamour and microphone glory at the Head On Radio Network. You know, there's a lot of other stuff that goes into it, too. Just ask Agnes. You know, she can tell you. But, no, there was some work that had to be done, and I had to do it, and I took a little couple of days away to get it done. And I'm just, my God, I'm thrilled to death to be back with you. Like I said, to me, it feels like Monday, but, of course, we all know that it's not Monday. No, it's...
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, brethren and sistren. You all know what time it is. Lay your hands upon the computer speakers and feel the healing glory flowing through for it's Wednesday, and it is therefore... It's prayer meeting, and we're not hurting for stuff to talk about tonight. Not at all, and there's real news out there. I got an interview coming up here in a few minutes, if everything works right, and we just, you know, cross our fingers and hold our tongues just so. It'll come off. Going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Timberwolf, who has beaten Hillary Clinton to the punch. Because Timberwolf has declared his candidacy, and you know, after what happened in Connecticut last night, I don't know, maybe we do start talking 2008 presidential politics, because Timberwolf has come out, and he is going to run for the presidency of the United States, and he's got one of the better, more honest campaign slogans that I've heard in recent memory, and I'll let him... tell you what that slogan is. And of course, we found Timberwolf by virtue of the fine folks, Clyde, Wally, Dookie, Ed, over at WD40.com. You know, I don't... is it the Timberwolf Party, Agnes? I'm not entirely certain, but we're going to have a lot of fun in the conversation this evening. Yes, dear?
I think that it is. It's kind of a all for one and one for all type party.
Oh, it's the Three Musketeers party.
Yes.
Okay. And that's Timber, T-I-M-B-R-E, for he is also a musician.
Yes.
So, you know.
We'll be playing some of his music.
Yeah, yes, we will. Agnes, you're set up for that?
Okay,
good. Well, I don't know. While we wait for Timberwolf to fire up the telephone and give us a ring in, I did want to. I don't go in for
celebrity news, celebrity gossip. I don't care what pregnancy Britney's on. I'm not all bent out of shape like the rest of the world is about the fact that Madonna invited that Nazi Pope to come to her concert last Sunday in Rome in his little red shoes and his hat from the House of Whoville hat design. I don't care. I don't care. On the other hand, however, I wanted to point something out, because this is someone, and I think he's on our side from what I've heard in the past, and I wanted to applaud his honesty and his ability to deal with issues, as we say around here, head on. Robin Williams is seeking treatment for alcoholism, according to his publicist, Mara Buxbaum. That announcement came today. He's 55 years old, Robin Williams is, and had been sober for about 20 years. I notice from the past perfect use of the word, had been sober, that he is not any longer. Mara Buxbaum said Williams found himself drinking again and has decided to take proactive measures to deal with this for his own well-being and the well-being of his family. He looks forward to returning to work this fall to support his upcoming film releases. And there was nothing further on it. And it's the what's not there that's telling. Because what's not there is that, you know, it doesn't say after involving himself in a lengthy tirade blaming the Jews for his 5 o'clock shadow, Robin Williams checked himself into rehab. No. You know, there's no account of him standing on the side of the road saying, just, you know, compare this with, say, a certain rabidly anti-Semitic torture freak who has to get crucified, killed, or in some other way made miserable in every film he does, you know, Mel Gibson, whose daddy lives about 20 minutes from here, and who I hear comes out on his porch in the morning and says, "Newspaper didn't hit the porch today. Dang Jews." You know, Hutton Gibson goes to the movies, loves to get the popcorn, loves to get the soda pop, will not eat the jujubes. I'm just, you know, best wishes to Robin Williams. Funny, funny man who's given me countless hours of laughter, whether it be in his, and some pathos, whether it be in his films or his stand-up routines. God, I'll never forget during the apartheid debate and the end of apartheid in South Africa. You know, that free-form mind just walking out on stage and getting up close and personal to the microphone and saying, "P.W. Botha, white courtesy phone, P.W. Botha, white courtesy phone." Brilliant. Just genius. I remember going to see the Aladdin Disney film. Half of that was ad-libbed. Awesome cosmic powers! Space. Yeah. So, you know, get well, Robin. Come back and be funny. Because we love you. Because you're not Mel Gibson. And you're not standing on a street corner screaming, "I'm drunk because of the Jews! The Jews made me drink!" Freaks. You know, meanwhile, you gotta love these goobers. The goobers, the gummers, the Newsmax people. I've got a pretty good idea who it was that thought, "I'm gonna get back at that Bob Kincaid. I'm gonna get him I'm gonna subscribe his email address to Newsmax." This is some of the funniest headline. Newsmax poll: Mel Gibson, no anti-Semite. Like you can poll that. You know, the idea that, 79% say that he's not an anti-Semite. Well, what if 79% are anti-Semitic themselves? But, you know, that's what you, and the right wing is falling apart, coming unglued. Because he wasn't able to go live this evening,
My brother here on the horn, my good friend Bruce Birch, had a wonderful load of audio from the whole coming apart party of Joe Lieberman. And he kindly passed it on to me. There's a clip there from Tony Snow. You got to hear this. We'll play a little chunk of it. The Republicans are in full sweat condition alpha crisis mode. Because they're evil, and I think they're finding out that people are finding out that they are, you know, that they're, I mean, I know it's kind of circular, but they're evil. So all of that is coming. Now, I hope you'll stick around. We're going to take a quick break. And we'll be back for our interview with our new friend Timberwolf, 2008 presidential candidate. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black. And if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Wednesday night. Proud of myself for even remembering that. Long time getting to Monday this time through. With us on the phone, and if you timberwolf.novachild.com, TimberWolf.novachild.com is the website you can go to if you want to look at it while we're conversing. Timber Wolf, Mr. Wolf, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to have you aboard. I think you're among the very first of those declaring for the 2008 presidential race.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I think I'm going to need a head start.
Well, at least on the money, right?
Yeah, that would help. $250 million apiece for each of the last two candidates in the last presidential election. That was their budget.
And what did it, you know, do you ever stop, Timber Wolf, Mr. Wolf, help me here.
Wolf is good, Bob.
Okay, Wolf is cool then. You ever stop Wolf and wonder what the heck that $250 million apiece bought?
Bought the press, I think.
Well, yeah, there's that. I mean, I'm a little bit silly, and it's our Wednesday night prayer meeting, of course. And you know, I'm thinking about, you know, clothing the naked, feeding the poor, housing the hungry, you know, that kind of thing.
Are you one of those radical right-wing Christians, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. I believe when you eat the cracker, it turns into Jesus meat in your tummy. I mean, that's all there is to it.
I love it. Yeah, I think those things are a little more important.
Well, you know, let's think about it in some other kinds of English. $500 million.
Yeah.
That's not $500 million, $500 million.
Yep. We could have started another war somewhere with that.
Gosh, yeah, or paid for a half a day of the one we got going on now.
Yeah.
Jeez, you know, I love your I love your campaign slogan, and I'm going to let you do it because I refrain from such language. But you know, you're not going to be bleeped or anything. Tell us your campaign slogan, please, Wolf.
Well, basically, it's because this shit's got to change.
And by that, what do you mean?
I look around at America today, and I think about what I grew up believing about America, whether it was true or not. I grew up believing America was a certain way. I believed that it was a good country, that it had the good intentions towards its people and towards the rest of the people in the world. I just had certain beliefs about it, and what I'm seeing today in no way resembles that.
Kind of feel a little cheated sometimes, don't you?
I really do.
Well, you know, I'm looking at your policy statement or lack thereof. I love this idea. You said if I had to state my platform in a single sentence, it would be do the right thing with humor and reckless abandon.
There it is.
Yeah, sort of random acts of kindness sort of thing. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think that's generally the idea. I believe that it's not all that hard to figure out what we should be doing. Maybe a little harder to implement it, but not impossible.
No, not at all. Let me ask you this. I've maintained on this program that the guy currently occupying the White House is a four-square coward, because it's cowards who usually behave in the bully fashion. Can you bring us a you know, that reckless abandon thing got me thinking. Can you bring us back to a time when a president wasn't a shrinking violet, lily livered coward?
Well, you know, it's been said and oft quoted, I suppose, that Lincoln was the last great president we had. It may be true. Personally, I think Jimmy Carter was a very good man. I don't know that he was a great president, though.
History may judge him less harshly than, I mean, we've been told that Jimmy Carter was not a great president because the people who wrote the history were Ronald Reagan's people.
That's true.
Yeah. Very few people seem to remember, Wolf, that they say, well, what about Jimmy Carter's inflation? Well, you know, what about Gerald Ford's inflation? What about Richard Nixon's inflation?
Right.
You know, that's all just stuff that rolled downhill. But
we have sort of a psychosis going on in this country right now. It seems to me we let one batch get us into a war and then rely on the next batch to get us out. And it's just seems to be cyclical, and it doesn't actually seem to be party related even.
Well, you know, we had 12 years of Ronald Reagan and George Bush, and they just about drove the United States into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Then you get 8 years of Bill Clinton, and I know some people aren't so crazy, especially on the progressive left, not so crazy about Bill, but he cleaned up that financial fiasco, turned over a surplus to George Bush, who then went on a drunken binge with it.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, from a character standpoint, all that character assassination stuff out there, Wolf, I don't think you're going to have a problem with that because you sort of acknowledge your character issues up front, don't you?
Well, I do. I feel it's important for people to know exactly who they're dealing with. And in my little video, I said that, you know, I served my country in the Navy for 5 grueling weeks.
Yeah.
It wasn't wartime or anything. I just joined up to be in the band, and the doctor told me I could go home. And I don't know if any folks out there have been to basic or not, but that was a no-brainer.
Leaving? You say I can leave and you're not going to shoot?
Yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Well, on your webpage, under the plan, it says you plan to tour the country beginning in 07 with a couple of busloads of artists, musicians, poets, comedians, and so forth. Is this for real?
It is for real. In fact, I almost hooked up with the World Can't Wait people recently, and I recommend anybody that's interested in checking out their website to do so. They're very opposed to the current administration, and they're trying to raise some awareness. You know, it seems like if you are pro-choice or any of a number of other things, then you don't have a voice in the current political climb. And they're out there saying something about it. I admire those kids for doing that. I think they're on the right path.
A couple of weeks ago, I had Sansara Taylor from World Can't Wait on the program. She was down in Jackson, Mississippi, fending off some religion industry oddballs. Who were down there trying to invade the Unitarian Church, and I can't get my head around that to save me.
You know how you run a Unitarian out of your neighborhood, Bob?
You burn a question mark in his yard, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh man, we're on the same wavelength. I'm loving this. it almost sounds like a harkening back to another bus tour. It almost sounds almost like a kind of a merry pranksters kind of thing without all the flashbacks that you're going for here.
I think that's accurate. That's basically what we want to do. You know, the artistic perspective is really, really unique and very important. The Constitution even basically requires the Congress to fund the arts on some level. There's some argument about what level that is, but I think the arts are extremely important, and one of the things that I hope to do as a musician myself is gather some people around me who have a perspective that's unique and want to present that, and I think we can take this show on the road and maybe do some good. You know, Will Rogers did it back in, what, the 20s?
Yeah.
And we've got Pat Paulson, who did something similar back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
I think. Oddly enough, reminds me a lot of Joe Lieberman in the face.
Yeah, it's true. Very funny. I hadn't made that connection, but it's really funny.
I think Pat had better politics, though.
No question.
But, so, you know, there's no issues of, I mean, we're never going to have to watch Timberwolf stand up and say, I didn't inhale, because you did.
I did inhale, yeah. And I'm, you know, it's, at first I was against the war, and then, you know, later after I thought about it, I was against the war, and now today I'm against the war.
Oh, geez, you mean you were against it before you were against it?
I was against it before I was against it. I don't know why the Democrats can't quite make up their mind on this one.
For the life of me, I can't either. And I think that, I don't know. I think fear and temerity, you know, I've rechristened this country the coward nation. I hate to say that. It shames me to say that. But everything we do is motivated by fear, Wolf. And,
yeah.
And frankly, there's this old story out there about laughing at the devil or something that it's good for you and it runs him off or something. I think you're right. I think we need a little more laughter.
I believe it. You know, without humor, we can't really address these issues. You know, a couple of my platform, a couple of my speech messages sort of work in that way. I like to say things like, I look around and I see all these gays and lesbians living together in sin. Tisk, tisk, they should get married.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, by all means, let's let guys and gals who want to get on the bridal registry.
Well, you know, it really comes down to the separation of church and state. I believe, if I'm not mistaken here, that the church is the one who decides who can get married.
Last I checked.
If they decide gays and lesbians can get married, more power to them. I don't see where the state has any involvement in that issue.
Well, some of it, I think, you know, a lot of times with conservative stuff, Wolf, if you scratch the surface of conservatism, what you find underneath is just plain old mean-spirited, skin-flinted, hard-heartedness. And in this instance, I think they're afraid that somebody might get a check.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know,
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the mean-spirited thing is more evident every day to me. We've got a guy in the White House right now that said the Constitution was just a blah-blah piece of paper, and those words are goddamn.
Yeah. And, them's fighting words to me.
They are. Me too. You know, the one thing that I believe has made America work for this long is that piece of paper.
Well, without a doubt. Where are you from, Timberwolf?
I'm basically an Okie.
Okay. Well, you know, I was born in Alabama, and we live in West Virginia, and so I think, you know, we're probably on the same wavelength.
I think so, too. Yeah, we're both mired in red states. Although those figures are changing, too, aren't they?
Well, they are, and, you know, we're still pretty blue here in West Virginia. I mean, we got two Democrat congressmen, two Democrat senators, a Democrat governor, sort of, and one weird little Republican congresswoman. And then, you know, they come here every 4 years and they go, them Democrats is going to get your squirrel rifle. and everything just goes insane. You know,
it does.
You know, 2004, they mailed a flyer to Arkansas and West Virginia. That's the only place the GOP mailed it to, saying John Kerry's going to get your Bible. What's John Kerry going to do with all the Bibles?
Yeah.
It only takes one. I don't know. You know, maybe he's going to use them for street lamps or something. It's just ridiculous.
He's a Roman Catholic, so maybe he just wanted to fill the pews with them. You know, the Bibles that they would take from these people wouldn't have the Apocrypha, and maybe that's a new movement in the Catholic Church. I haven't heard anything about it. It's just a suspicion.
Well, no, you may very well be right. Well, where's the money going to come from to do all this, Wolf?
Well, I'm counting on the good people of the United States of America to help me out with this. I've got to raise $5,000 just to be able to declare. So, and it has to come from three or more sources, because anything over that is considered improper.
Okay, so one guy can't write you the $5,000 check.
Exactly.
Well, darn, I had the checkbook out. What a bounce from here to Oklahoma, but, you know.
Yeah, right.
But it's, you know, it's not for want of good intent. How about, you know, your music, your art, stuff like that? Where can folks hear it?
The best place is probably the pg5yp.com website. That's a good spot to start. And I think, I don't know if we have links up at this point, but we're moving in that general direction. It's kind of a slow build process, but we're getting there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm intrigued by this bus tour. If there's some way to figure out where we've got broadband coverage, by God, I might go for a ride on it myself.
Let's do it.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Wolf, it's been a pleasure. I hope you'll keep us posted as things develop. You get new songs out there, things like that. Please ship them along, would you?
I sure will, Bob. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure.
Likewise.
You take care now.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Our new friend Timberwolf. PG5YP.com. PG5YP.com. And also Timberwolf, and that's the musical Timber, T-I-M-B-R-E, Wolf, W-O-L-F, .NovaChild.com. You know, great policy statement. Let's see. As for questions regarding my character, well, I'm certainly a character. I like women a lot, and I can't get away from the Internet girls. Unlike the current White House resident, I remember doing coke, and unlike the previous president, I inhaled. What was it that Martin Luther said? He who does not love wine, women, and song remains a fool his whole life long. And I think we're going. This is legitimate and artistically done protest. And I think America needs to remember or re-remember or rediscover what that looks like and sounds like. He mentioned Pat Paulson. Now, I'm sure some of you that are older than me remember Pat Paulson better than I do. Because what? Pat Paulson announced his candidacy for the presidency of the United States on Laugh-In? And no kidding, unless it's just me, go out and check and see if Joe Lieberman and Pat Paulson don't look a little bit alike. That is. So best of luck to Timberwolf. And follow the campaign. Timberwolf, 2008, the man who declared for the presidency before Hillary Clinton. Even though Flush Flimball has been declaring her candidacy for president in 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012, and 2016, since roughly 1998. Right? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, tonight is prayer meeting night, but it's also celebrating the demise of Joe Lieberman night. I was falling asleep last night, and in that consciousness, that semi-conscious state between sleeping and waking, something dawned on me. And it was that hateful vision of that nasty, nasty bumper sticker that Smothers Brothers. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Laugh-In. See how it is? No, Smothers Brothers, Pat Paulson. Very good. Thank you, Ben Birch. Just as with the yellow ribbon magnets that were made in China and suddenly appeared in the United States almost overnight, manufacturing on that level has to be planned. The power of pride stickers that appeared almost before the missiles started striking the homes of little children in Iraq in March 2003 had to be planned. Had to be part of an inside job. So, too, the bumper stickers that I was reminded of as I was floating off to Dreamland last night. Of Sore Loser Man. Remember that was the best that the Republicans could come up with? As a play on words for Gore and Lieberman when Al Gore was out there saying, you know, I mean, it's just me, but I'd like to count all the votes. And the Republicans were going, count all the votes. the hell are you talking about? We're not going to count all the votes. We can't count all the votes. We can't win if we count all the votes. What do you think this is? A republic or something? Heavens to Murgatroyd. Count all the votes. So we got this bumper sticker that says, Sore Loser Man. And everything in that state between waking and sleeping sort of coalesced for me. And I wondered, going back to 2000, I wondered whether Al Gore, his hopes and dreams were dashed by Joe Lieberman. Now, maybe that doesn't make a lot of sense to you yet. I'll try to flesh it out a little bit. This is a guy who lost an election and stood up and said, I don't care. I'm going to run anyway. I'm going to run as an independent Democrat. I got me 7,500 signatures. I don't care what you voters said. I got a natural-born right. Now, see, there I am doing Lieberman as a redneck. I have a natural-born... see, that's John Kerry. I can't do Lieberman. He's too dull. But, you know, basically telling the Democratic voters of Connecticut to get screwed, that he would be their senator whether they liked it or not. How dare they fire him from the Senate after only 18 years? You see, but you know, Ned Lamont, we've got the audio of it later. Let me run straight to the phones. David, calling from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Bob. And as for Mr. Lieberman, before I go off into my highly researched petroleum-based rant, Mr. Lieberman, you know what? Oh, you said something that triggered my feeble brain. You said only 18 years in the Senate. I hope the listeners realize that if Mr. Lieberman, at whatever age he was when he was elected to the Senate, if he only had the income from then until the end of his term in the Senate, which will be in about 6 months, and the lifetime pension from being in the Senate, he will make more money than half the Americans cashing a work-related paycheck today. If he had done nothing else, he will earn more than half the Americans in their lifetime in those 18 years, plus that nice little pension he gets. So let's not worry too much about him.
No, he's not going to be out there eating stale matzah or anything.
No, he will not be in the cat food lane unless he owns a whole bunch of cats. And as far as the voters of Connecticut, I think they're going to view this as the affront that I believe it to be, which is just like you said. Oh, didn't like in the primary? Well, let me explain this to you. I'll show you who really should be your senator, and I'll make you take it and like it, because now then I'll smile and I'll be contrite and I'll speak slowly and dully until you get it that I'm supposed to be your senator. I think Connecticut's going to kick his butt completely around the block again.
Well, I hope they do. You know, the conventional wisdom out there, David, you know, there's going to be a lot more voters than, you know, this was just 300,000 people in a primary. It's going to be a lot more voters than that in November. Blah, 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 blah.
I think there's a very, very informed, active, responsive electorate. Every person in that state realizes that if that state, and it is, doesn't want the war to continue, the last thing they're going to do is to let whatever number of Republicans are in that state elect a guy that wants to make out with President Bush. Yes, kid.
Oh, God, there's that. That's that whole body shudder. The little old ladies. Somebody's walking across your grave. No, it's just no.
No, we just watched the video of the embrace and the passionate licky face.
You're just making it worse.
So let's go on to, there's a little catchphrase that several informed and I believe truthful people have put into the public discourse lately, and that is, the United States of America is a prisoner of its energy policy. The United States of America is a prisoner of its energy policy. The Bushistas don't care about that. You know, the lockstep group that marches behind five deferment dick, all the energy companies don't care about that.
The Republican Congress doesn't care about that.
Republican Congress doesn't care about that. But if you won't mind, because a couple of things click, this business of this pipeline cracking in Alaska.
Yeah, that just just happened. I mean, you know, perfectly good pipeline. One day we woke up, it was cracked.
No, Bob, let's before we get to the details of that, I want to make sure everybody in the listening audience, the vast thousands that they are, realize that BP, British Petroleum, is one of the most ugly, completely unprincipled companies in the world and has been for decades.
But they painted all their stations green, David.
They had green and yellow as a corporate color going back to a long, long time ago. It has nothing to do with their stupid little daisy and their cute little commercial. They got in debt to make sure they had a European supply that was inexhaustible. They got in bed with Idi Amin and watched, in dinner meetings, BP officials watched him dispatch men to be killed later as he laughed about it. And then said, now then, gentlemen, shall we go on to dinner? And BP never blanched, never stepped back. They embraced. They are an ugly, unprincipled company and have been for over 20 years. They were completely in bed with everything that a despicable individual like Idi Amin did. So historically, you know, it's real easy to know what they're about. 6 or 8 months ago in the Houston area, a BP-controlled refinery had a little safety issue. Several American citizens were killed. Nothing has happened about it since then. The Bush administration swept the whole thing under the rug. It was on the news for 2 days, and then, boom, there were policy statements in the New York Times. We at British Petroleum will make sure we try to do better if we feel like it and it doesn't affect the quarterly report or the weekly profit figure. Okay, in March, there was a pipeline leak in Alaska. Gee whiz, tip off something's coming? Think so. Now then, crack, the big one opens wide open. And now then we know a few days later they're going to shut down the whole field. Almost 10% of American petroleum conversion is going to go away. Oh, gee, what does that mean? How could that happen? One of the reasons it happened is BP has refused to do proper pipeline maintenance for over 10 years. Every other person that pumps oil in that manner, A, they know what's going through it. B, they run a thing called a pig through it. What does a pig do? It's a funny little term that high-tech people have for this piece of equipment that goes through the line that both cleans, looks for defects, checks for this, looks for that, costs a lot of money. It means that the line's out of production for X number of days. Oh, no, they didn't bother. Over 10 years, they didn't bother. They didn't want to acknowledge that.
And before we, I understand everything you're saying, David, and I agree with it. And before we go any further, before somebody says, well, you know, that's a conspiracy theory. The reason, when you were talking about the people who don't care a little bit earlier, and I mentioned the Republican Congress, 5 years ago, a whistleblower testified under oath, you know, unlike Alberto Gonzalez and Dick Cheney and Bush sitting on his lap and stuff like that, they actually made him take an oath. And he testified before the Republican Congress 5 years ago under oath that BP knew that this pipeline that they were duty and contractually bound to maintain was gonna fail.
I remember that. I hadn't thought about that in what little bit of work that I had done, but you are exactly right. And I thought at the time, gee whiz, you know what? That'll be a problem one of these days because you can't neglect equipment. I've got an engineering background. You can't neglect equipment.
No, because
And those are, you know, those are extremes of geology, geography, and temperature.
You bet they are.
And materials, you know, I mean, you can leave a lawnmower in the rain for 3 days in Middle Tennessee, and it won't start.
Oh, you bet it will.
Now, cut that temperature by 60 degrees Fahrenheit, the lines of latitude northward, in a remote area, hard to get to, and it's, what do you get?
Well, you get a serious problem that, when neglected for about a decade and a half, and they also found out, and they've known it for years, that they were pumping salt water, not just crude. So,
that's corrosive, isn't it?
I think so. Most ferrous metals that you build pipelines out of don't like salt water, especially not for 6 or 8 years at a crack. And it was a bit of a surprise that much salt water was coming up, but it did. So now.
And when that kind of salt water comes up, I'm sorry, you're doing it again, David. You're taking me in all kinds of different directions. When that kind of salt water is coming out of your wells, not good news.
No. So, all right, now, the line is cracked. They've shut the field down. And I knew it would do this. I knew the right-wing megaphone would do this. And now I'm looking at the clock. Can I beat the breakup? Or should I let you take a break?
No, you're fine. You're golden.
Two different right-wing megaphone-type guys today said, don't worry about it, it's not that big a deal. You know, our friends, the Saudis, or other people will take up the slack, or we'll use up some of this great storage raw crude that we have. Well, that's really not the case. What we have stored is days, not 6 months. They think this field will be back in operation sometime in January. The Saudis produce a type of crude that is by grade absolute crap compared to the, quote, sweet crude that comes from Alaska, comes from the North Atlantic, requires a completely different type of refining. This stuff, you know, the stuff that comes from Saudi Arabia, they run ocean-going ships on that. It's more like tar, even after refining. It can't even make gasoline. So let's forget about that. So the short version of this is that the Bush administration, once again, put America into a spot where, as of right now, the first thing that's going to happen is gas prices are going to creep up. Everything is going to be more painful. If you don't like $3, I bet you like $3.30 even less. And now then, there is absolutely no safety net anywhere in the world for us as a nation, energy source-wise. There is no safety net. And I come back to the phrase, we are a prisoner of our energy policy. Gee whiz, do you suppose Iran is thinking about what they could do to us if they suddenly sit on their supply for a while and 3:30 becomes, oh golly, 4:30?
Sure.
Won't that be fun?
100 and a quarter a barrel?
Do you suppose the Iraqi dissident that wants our life as miserable as possible until we stop occupying their country, make it a little bit harder to pump their crude? Oh, gosh. Do you suppose they're going to be a little bit more invigorated? They watch the news. They now know that whatever they can do to us counts 3 times more than it used to. And if you're not mad already, because of the prices going up around the world, BP as a company won't even notice it at the bottom line. Prices going up without that field operating, they'll make even more total dollars than if the field was operating. Hey, Bush voters, how's that WX working out for you now?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And you know, and you talk about no safety net.
Because, well, you know, because we started out with the Bush administration back in, what, 2001, 2002, trying to foment a coup against Hugo Chavez. We've convinced him, you know, by virtue of the goobers like Frank or like Pat Robertson, you know, I think we should knock him off. He's disinclined to help.
Oh, I don't think he's going to show up with a plate of cookies, you know.
And meanwhile, a bunch of patriotic Mexicans are in the streets trying to keep the conservative party candidate, you know, in other words, the Bush boy toy, from getting into office. And I'm guessing, considering the way that the Bush administration behaved in advance of the Mexican national elections, Antonio Manuel López Obrador is going to be disinclined to be really, really friendly.
Not very likely, but
you know, these are you know, we've had this debate, and you've been party to it from time to time, David, about are these people that are screwing our country blind evil geniuses or hopelessly inept, screw-up common thugs?
I've got the answer for you, Bob, because after all of this naysaying, after all this negativity, after all of this concern, after all this hand-wringing, I want you to know that Mr. Bush's energy secretary, one Secretary Sam Bodman, is on the job and protecting America.
Doing a heck of a job there, Boddy.
Today, Mr. Sam Bodman, the Energy Secretary, told the whole world, well, there's going to be some interruption in supply, but the real concern for this administration is to ensure that Iran does not develop a nuclear weapon system. That's the biggest concern with us. This oil thing will work itself out. That's a paraphrase.
Sure, because, no.
But it's so close. I can't believe that idiot would say that. At this moment in time, when we are so vulnerable, now then all he can think about, according to the press release that Carl wrote in big crayon for us.
Yeah. I know. And of course, you know, I was looking, you know, I go and I browse around. I went and looked at CNN, and there it was on the CNN website. Big yellow banner across the top. Never seen it there before. But on the website it says, breaking news. Israel claims 15 dead Iranian bodies found among Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon. What, have they got it tattooed on the back of their neck?
Well, that makes it all worth it. What is it? 600 people dead in Lebanon that absolutely, you know, that are female and under the age of 6? Well, obviously, that makes it all worth it. That just clinches it, don't you think?
Yeah.
A friend of mine that I went to high school with sent me an email of a woman that is politically active in Beirut, Lebanon. The condominium building that she lives in was hit by an Israeli ordnance about 36 hours ago, and a shell came through the top two floors of reinforced concrete, armor piercing, and landed in her bedroom and did not detonate.
Jeez.
And here's a 36-year-old woman, mother of three, husband, the kid. These are not Hezbollah. They got no rocket launcher.
No.
But Israel shrugs and goes, it happens. To get one Hezbollah, we kill a couple of hundred Lebanese. What's the big deal? Oh, and yeah, now then they've gone out there and written Iranian on the, you know, across the back of the neck of you. Both sides need to quit.
Both sides need to quit.
Both
exactly.
Sides need to be in the Bob Kincaid room where they are told, work it out or you both get killed.
Yeah. Ehud Olmert, Sheikh Nasrallah. Welcome to the room where you don't leave until you have peace.
It's you two and Hulk Hogan, and only Hulk's coming out alive if you guys keep wanting to fight. So it's all wrestling, Bob.
It's all wrestling, Dave.
But not over there. That's not all.
No.
Our politics someday.
I know.
Well, Bob, I've just
Thank you so much for all of the perspective, David, because you're so right. Across the board, a nation held hostage by its own energy policy. Going to hang on to that one, if you don't mind.
But, I mean, I'm quoting. I mean, other people that really know what they're talking about. I just, you know, if I'm going to steal, I'm going to steal from those that have a track record, and several do, and it's obvious to me, because all it's going to take is one stinking hurricane in Houston, one more pipeline, the Iranians deciding, let's see what happens if our oil doesn't reach the market for 30 days. Let's see how the American industrial locomotive does without this.
And
there's
boom.
No safety. There is no safety. And on that note, one other thing. Pac-Man's having a great camp. You and I are going to have to eat some serious grill.
Oh, okay. Later, David.
On to the news.
Bye now. You guys know the format better than I do. It is time for the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Israeli troops and tanks have begun moving into southern Lebanon after Israel decided to expand its offensive. Explosions were heard hours later, but Israeli officials deny the strikes were part of the campaign. The U.S. is urging Israel to exercise caution, saying it does not want the war to escalate. Today, Hezbollah fired more than 150 rockets into Israel as Israeli jets continued to bomb Lebanon. 15 Israelis were killed today, the single deadliest day for Israel. At the UN, diplomats discussed two different versions of a draft resolution for a ceasefire. The differences revolve around when a French-led peacekeeping force should be deployed and when Israel should withdraw. Connecticut Senator and former vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman has filed to run as an independent in November. That follows his loss in yesterday's primary to anti-war candidate Ned Lamont. Two other notables lost their seats in other primaries. They include Georgia Democratic Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney and Michigan Republican Congressman Joe Schwartz. In Iraq today, three U.S. soldiers were killed in combat in the Anbar province, and divers continue searching for two American soldiers who have been missing since their helicopter crashed in the province earlier. The Washington Post reports that the Bush administration is changing war crimes laws. The changes would prevent the prosecution of political appointees, CIA officers, and former military personnel for crimes barred by the Geneva Convention. Those crimes include humiliating or degrading prisoners. Baghdad's morgue director says the morgue received nearly 2,000 bodies last month. That's the highest number in 5 months. More Iraqi and coalition troops are now stationed in the capital to help curb the violence. A new CNN poll finds that 60% of Americans and 86% of Democrats oppose the war in Iraq. The poll also shows that 61% of Americans think U.S. troop withdrawal should begin by the end of the year. Authorities say 3 of 11 missing Egyptian students have been found. The search continues for the other 8. The students were among a group of 17 Egyptians who arrived in New York at the end of July. In Washington, a 21-year-old Navy sailor has been charged with spying for Russia. He already faces espionage and desertion charges and is now accused of trying to give classified information to foreign agents on 3 separate occasions. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The Humane Society is offering China $100,000 if it will stop slaughtering dogs and vaccinate them instead. 16 people have recently died of rabies. Authorities have so far killed tens of thousands of dogs, prompting an international call for a boycott of Chinese goods. A growing labor shortage in China could spell trouble for U.S. retailers this holiday season. Trade groups say China produces more than 90% of the world's toys, 53% of all footwear, and 50% of all clothing. Toyota won top honors in 8 categories of the J.D. Power & Associates Vehicle Dependability Study. Toyota recently surpassed Ford as the second-largest car maker in America. The FCC is auctioning off airwave rights to mobile wireless companies. They'll bid for more than 1,100 licenses in the auction, which could last for weeks. A new report says that among the world's major cities, Oslo and London are the most expensive, followed by Copenhagen, Zurich, and Tokyo. The cheapest are Kuala Lumpur and Dubai. A new report says that among the world's major cities, Oslo and London are the most expensive. They're followed by Copenhagen, Zurich, and Tokyo. U.S. mortgage applications rose 4.9% last week from the previous week's 4-year low. Light sweet crude settled today at $76.35. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was down 97 points, NASDAQ down 1, S&P 500 down 6. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
6.5 minutes after the hour. Welcome to the second hour of Head On. I'm Bob. And before we do anything else, let's go to the phones. Luke is joining us from Knoxville, Tennessee, from Nashville to Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I tell you what, this thing last night, it was just sort of like the mainstream media. It was just fun watching them twist themselves into pretzels.
Yeah, it was. And of course, like I said, Tony Snow, he's lost his mind.
Threw Daddy Bush under the bus. I mean, really? I wonder, is they going to frog march him down to Gitmo? You know, I mean.
They may even take Barbara's picture off the Quaker Oats box.
Oh, I tell you, I heard that, dude. And you're just kind of sitting there with your mind going, huh?
I know.
He didn't say that, did he?
Yeah, he did.
It's like you just got to wonder who put him up to that. I mean, you got to wonder when he got off the podium, did somebody grab him by the lapels? Or was that part of the plan?
Well, you know, Howard Dean issued a little blurb today. He said, Republicans can try to spin their propaganda. Well, you know, if he'd been.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to. Republicans don't spin it, they catapult it. You know, we got to take advantage of dear leader's little verbalisms. Republicans can try to catapult their propaganda, but the truth is Republicans are out of touch with America, and the November elections will be a referendum on George Bush's failed policies. The American public does not trust Republicans to take care of the people's business. And why should they, given what George Bush's policies have done to America? The majority of Americans think the war in Iraq was a mistake. Republicans are clearly out of touch on everything from raising the minimum wage to fighting for better health care to addressing sky-high gas prices to the war in Iraq. Democrats are united and will take our country in a new direction this November. And, of course, you know, one of the telling factors was in Ned Lamont's acceptance speech last night, Luke, because he said very clearly,
this isn't just about the war. And he sat there and ticked off a few of those things really quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they were, when you read some of the stuff in the on the web and stuff today, you know, a bunch of them are saying, you know, it wasn't just the war. I mean, you know, you can go back over good old Joe, and you can sit there. Let me see. I've got it right here at hand. See, we've got the school vouchers, the energy bill, bankruptcy bill. Let's see, the employees.
Sam Alito is enough. I mean, that's enough right there. Sam Alito.
So, I mean, you get into Shivo, this whole thing. I mean, remember, Joe was one of the few people supporting Dear Leader on Social Security.
Yes, he was.
I mean, you know, it's like I say, it's a list of what didn't Joe say that was stupid and oh. I tell you what, I got thinking about this today. I was over at Crooks and Liars looking at this because it's one of those pieces of tape I just still love to watch all the time. I'll be honest, I really need to. I'm going to download it down to my home system. I think the night before the election, this November, we should get Saturday Night Live to run the one with the Al Gore introduction.
Oh, you mean the one from, who could have imagined we'd have too much oil?
Yeah. I mean, that right there ought to be the commercial that the Democrats should run. It's like, you know, here's what we could have had, folks. You know.
And I can't help wondering, Luke, honest to God, I can't. How much of the way things played out in 2000 was Lieberman's doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, look at
that fight. He didn't have the stomach for because it would have meant crossing the Connecticut bushes and the Maine bushes because they're not Texans.
Well,
we all know.
I mean,
that.
You know, if you really want something, you could probably go online and find it and watch him. Look at some clips from him during his debate with dear old Dick Cheney. Then look at him during his debate with Ned Lamont. These are two different people.
Yeah,
I mean, in that one with Dick Cheney, you could have put up a cardboard figure, would have given a better fight. And in the one with Ned Lamont, he was on full attack mode the whole way. It's like, where was this in 2000?
Well, but see, he felt like he was socially, politically, and culturally better than Ned Lamont.
Well, I mean,
and I despise that kind of elitism.
Well, I'd say he's at the point now he believes it's his right to have that seat.
Well, the best did you
the election.
Did you hear him moaning about the well? Ned Lamont had more money than me.
Well, did you get the thing I sent you? The thing from was it? The lady's name was Ann Davidow.
Yeah.
Did you read that? Like, it's like the next to last paragraph where she's talking about Gore's speech in 2000. Let me pull this up real quick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
And she says that. Lieberman's concession speech was one of the least gracious, most bitter, and most condescending I've ever heard. Al Gore was, some said, far too gracious in conceding defeat in the 2000 presidential election, but he was statesmanlike in his remarks as he attempted to heal the rift caused by the recent recount rancor. No such approach was taken by the good senator. His bellicose call for support was unseemly and discordant and provided an insight into the true nature of the man.
Well, I think it's how you respond in crisis and how you respond during controversy that tells us a lot about people, especially in politics. And I don't think Joe Lieberman could have handled this more
badly.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that got to me also last night was watching the coverage. Was I was sitting there watching Stephanopoulos. And he was sitting there, and they were just going on about how this is going to destroy the Democratic Party. I'm sitting there going, no, George, this is what's going to kill the DLC.
Well, but see, to them, that is.
But that's what I mean. That, to them, is the Democratic Party. Like, no, 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 no. That's the right wing of the Democratic Party, which we don't mind having as part of the whole. But they do not drive the bus.
No, and this whole line of crap about, well, you know, this goes to show that the Democratic Party as being driven to the left by the cut-and-run, defeatist, isolationist, left-wing communists of the Democratic Party. Man, when they're hauling that stuff out, you know that they're scared.
I was going to say, they better be wearing the blue hazmat suits because that stuff's awful toxic there, I tell you.
It is indeed. It is indeed.
It's just amazing to watch some of this stuff. I'm sitting here right now watching. I've got on the silence on mute. I'm sitting here watching the countdown. This is going to be good. And I'm going to wait tonight to see Daily Show and Colbert, see what comes out. But you know, it's one of those things. Just like say, most of these people on the mainstream, you're just like sitting there going, what, you know, like we've said before, welcome to Bizarro World, because you all are not on the same planet the rest of us are on. We're getting a feed through the Twilight Zone.
Well, and I mean, there's I don't know how many different ways to point out how wrong Joe Lieberman was. This country is turning away from that wholesale approval of, you know, well, you know, Israel can slaughter all the babies it wants to. That's okay. They're just Lebanese babies. And, you know, there's Joe just being wrong.
I mean, the
yeah, babies? What babies? Hezbollah babies? Oh, kill them.
One of the shows last night or this morning, what it was, I saw cannot think of his name all of a sudden. And I mean, he was just, you know, Israel could do no wrong. And I'm like,
oh, Alan Dershowitz?
Dershowitz, that's who it was. And I generally like Dershowitz on most things. You know what I mean?
He's lost his mind on this, Luke.
That's what I mean. When this comes up, he just totally puts the blinders on. It's like, say, they can nuke the UN. You know what I mean? He'd say, well, they had every right to. You know, it's like,
I know. You know, I began noticing this reading some of his blog postings, and, you know, you come to the conclusion, you can't help reaching it, that Alan Dershowitz believes that anybody who ever served him a cold cup of coffee is a Nazi.
Well, have you noticed, though, one thing I've really noticed lately on the coverage? Every time I turn around, CNN, who I think are about to still slip on their Israeli uniform, every time I turn around, well, I mean, at least Wolf and his crew.
Well, you got to remember, Wolf used to work for the Jerusalem Post.
But the thing gets me is every time I turn around, they're telling me how many rockets were striking and all this, and it's like, okay, tell me how much ordnance the Israelis have shot off.
Yeah, just round number, just round it, rough tonnage.
I mean, you know, tonnage. I mean, because we know the only one I've heard was that, you know, like we talked about that basement that they blew up with 46,000 pounds of explosives. It's like saying, I think you put all those Katusha rockets together, they fired, it may not be that much.
No. But, you know, that's what you hear about, Luke. Well, you know, the Katusha rockets are filled with ball bearings.
So are claymores. I mean.
Well, it is 500-pound bombs fragment into shrapnel but, you know, no, the Katushas are filled with ball bearings.
I mean, you know, it's just amazing to sit and watch this. And I'm sitting there going, you know, you'd really like to take one of these stories and, like I say, take all the words Israel out and just put in the word country and hand it to one of them and say, what would you say about this? Oh, these are terrorists.
Yeah, this is a rogue regime that must be reined in. But, you know, no, the other side of that, Luke, is, of course, this just putrid argument. No nation on earth would be called upon to act with the restraint that Israel is called upon to act with.
I would just like to see a listing on how much ordnance we've sent to them lately.
Well, you know, Andy pointed it out Friday evening, I think it was, this past, that, you know, we flew that emergency shipment, you know, an emergency shipment of bombs and fuel. We flew it, you know, on, you know, all, the phone lit up, you know, the Bat Cave, and it was, you know, Commissioner Gordon Olmert or whatever, and gotta have it.
Oh, yes.
And we violated English airspace. They had to sneak it off to Scotland for the refuel. It was just embarrassing. Because Israel didn't have enough bombs to drop on Lebanese civilians.
It's like, say, I saw one of the articles that somebody said, okay, now what happens now when say, Syria decides, you know, the Israelis are a danger to us. They're a threat to us, so we have to preemptively attack them.
Well, you know, we did kind of invent that preemptive war doctrine, didn't we, Luke? Well, not we, but, I mean, you know, dear leader and his...
I'm just waiting for somebody to do it to them and then hear them cry foul.
Well, that big old crocodile tears, too. I mean,
I see it's past the quarter hour. So let you get
all right, Luke, thanks so much. I appreciate all your thoughts. Take care now.
Bye, bud.
Bye now. Bye. And a quick break and then more phone calls. 877-443-2366 is the number. Join in. Any perspective is welcome. We're just all nice here. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob.
That's wrapped around me is cutting through my skin, and the doubts that I've surrounded. that way. So I'll come by and see you again. I'll be such a very good friend. Have mercy on my soul. I will never let you know where my mind has been.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. DUBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You can do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/pass it on. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works, and other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Welcome to Wednesday Night Prayer Meeting with your host, Brother Bob Kincaid. Put your hands together, raise your eyes to the light, and welcome him. The truth will set you free. And now, here is Brother Bob Kincaid.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And let's go straight to the phones at 23 minutes past the hour. Roy has been waiting, calling from Texas. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Man, it's a good day to be a Democrat.
It is, isn't it?
I'm telling you what, that last night in Connecticut, that just frosted those Repubs.
They're
not circling their wagons.
Well, you know, I don't know if they're circling the wagons, burning the wagons, stealing the wagons, looting the wagons, you know, doing whatever Republicans do, Roy. But the fact is. We found out how they behave when they're in a pinch, and just as we, yeah, because Lieberman is not a Democrat.
No. And I was listening to you and Luke there while I was on hold, and Joe Lieberman is Bush's best friend.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes me go back and wonder if Lieberman wasn't part of the problem in 2000 and in convincing Al Gore not to fight.
Well, it could have been. But, you know, in all, anybody can say all they want to about 2000, but that was a stolen election. That's just pure and simple.
Yeah, and the thing was, Lieberman didn't have any stomach for that fight.
No.
And I think what we're going to see here, Roy, is a, I hope, a rebirth of spine in the Democratic Party.
Oh, I tell you what, this morning, very, very early today, every prominent Democrat has already endorsed Ned Lamont.
Well, yeah, I mean...
all of them. And
supposedly Hillary's PAC has already given Ned Lamont money.
Yeah, and I was watching Hardball, and we've talked about Chris Matthews before, pretty hollow the way he can be sometimes, trying to act like a good guy when we know he's really and truly a full-fledged Republican.
Yeah.
But today he had on Ken Melman on, and Melman couldn't even talk straight about anything, not nothing. And Chris Matthews literally called him down and told him, Ken, you're not talking straight, and I can't have that. And
oh, Lord, Chris trying to get right, find the foot of the cross too, isn't he?
Oh, but, you know, they want to get up there and squat. They run old Tony Snow out today, saying 1991 caused 9/11. Bullshit. All they're doing is wanting to scare that percentage that they can always count on getting scared.
Well, then, what a pitiful political philosophy, right?
Yeah.
How sad that it, but, you know, this is a terrified, or this is what they hope is a terrified nation. I want to think that with people like Ned Lamont showing up, Joe Lieberman, you know, a political novice, never run for so much as dog catcher before, Addie. That America is emboldened to start calling incompetent, you know, never mind the evil people, never mind the bad people. We got a long way to go toward fixing this country. Just in calling the incompetent people.
Right.
These people are wholesale incompetent, Roy.
That's right.
And
they're trying to claim that Ned Lamont had only one issue, Iraq and Bush kissing Lieberman, trying to make allies. And Ned Lamont had every kind of an issue that you could dream of. For 18 years of incompetence, Joe Lieberman had really got to where he wasn't even part of Connecticut.
Well, that's precisely the point, Roy. It's not a question of what issues Ned Lamont has. It's a question of what issues Joe Lieberman has created. And he has created them by the bushel basketful. Whether it's the war in Iraq, and that's, or him getting too close to Bush, or his bankruptcy bill, the votes on John Roberts and Alito. You know, Ned Lamont is not going to want for things to criticize Joe Lieberman about to the what is a decently progressive mindset in Connecticut.
Yeah, but maybe in the end he'll get to the point that he can't raise any money and he'll drop out because Ken Melman was literally on there. Wouldn't come out and say so, but they have such a weak Republican candidate that he is just tickled to death that Lieberman's still in the race. But if all the Democrats will stand their ground and won't contribute money to Lieberman, maybe he'll pull out of there one day.
Well, and that's the other thing. You know, if the Republicans really want Lieberman, see what happens to me, Roy? If they really want Lieberman to win, they're going to have to pony up their own money.
Right, right.
And the minute that Joe starts taking Republican money, it's over.
You think Lamont won't jump on that in a New York minute? Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, all the right-wing stuff. Oh, you know, because, I get this crazy garbage from Newsmax. Dick Morris says this is a bad sign for Hillary. Yeah, Hillary Schmillery. She has not declared her intention to run for president, and they've already got her halfway to the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got the little Swift boats down there in the docks ready to go out and circle and say that, you know, she really didn't get that Purple Heart working for the Rose Law Firm when she shot Vince Foster through a watermelon. They're crazy. And they're incompetent.
They are.
You know, just incompetent stooges. And it's time to have shed of them. You know, in the conversation with David I had a little bit ago, Roy, the fact, you know, it's got to be driven home. This pipeline that has gone south in Alaska, the Republican Congress was warned about it 5 years ago and didn't dare say boo to British Petroleum.
Okay. And do you think they're publicizing who actually owns that up there? It's ExxonMobil.
Well, ExxonMobil, yeah, and the Alyeska Pipeline Service is responsible for a big chunk of it, and the president of BP used to work for those guys.
Right, and it was on CNN yesterday afternoon that someone, I don't recall who it was, is asked for a FBI investigation. Of course, that ain't going nowhere. But anyhow, said that ExxonMobil, BP, none of they haven't maintained that pipeline since 1992.
No, and not only that, as part of the, and this is well worth remembering because everything sort of is part of it, it's well worth remembering that the settlement for the Exxon Valdez spill was $900 to be paid over the course of 10 years by Exxon. However, there was a reopening clause. And the Justice Department just served, and it was open until 2006, and the Justice Department just served notice that they were reopening the Exxon Valdez spill payout and claiming another $92 million against Exxon for the stuff that Exxon never did that they promised they'd do.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything becomes part of it. That money's got to be made back somehow. And it will be made back, and it'll be made back on your back and my back and our backs.
Right, right.
And, you know, I don't know what it is there in Texas. I paid $3.10 a gallon today.
It's $3.05.
Well, okay, so it might go up, you know, maybe it goes to $3.12, maybe we see $3.20. But then, you know, because we're conditioned like laboratory animals, Roy, if it'll just go back to $2.75 a gallon, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah, that's exactly the, you know, I spent 28 years working in the oil field, and I don't think anybody can dream up too many new things that I haven't already seen the big oil company pull through my years of working there. And it's just completely out of whack. And then they've got the nerve to print the headlines, record profits this past quarter, $10 billion. Good Lord of mercy.
And we sit back and just,
Yeah.
But I don't know where the maybe you do, Roy. I don't know where the breaking point is.
I don't.
Is it $3.50 a gallon gas? Is it $5 a gallon gas? You know, at what point because this is the American people's choice.
Well, let me tell you a story. This is completely different. But yesterday I was in the grocery store, and I picked up a bottle of Catalina French dressing, and it was the only thing in my basket. And I was standing in line waiting to get some sandwich meat slice. And this old fella, an old black guy, would have guessed him in the range of 75 or up. And he came up to me, and he just pointed at that bottle of salad dressing. And he said, I love that stuff, but we can't afford that anymore. We just have to use salt and pepper. That's all we use anymore. And I just really wanted to buy him a bottle and give it to him, but I didn't. But he went on.
He wouldn't have took it, Roy.
No. He went on and on and on about what him and his wife can't afford this day and time, because when they go to the gas pump, they just get a little bit of gasoline, and that's as far as they can go. But he asked me, he said, what's it going to take? And I told him, I said, in my opinion, it's when the United States wakes up and votes the SB's out of office that's up there now.
I think that's got to be what happens, and it's got to, you know, and there's more voting takes place than at the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
Roy, you know, if we had any sense, we could vote with our wallets.
Yeah.
But so far, we've shown ourselves unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
The SUVs, you know, they're still on the lots. They're slowing. You know, sales are slowing down a little bit. But, you know, I don't know. I reckon maybe if you're making $100,000 a year, $3 a gallon gas doesn't bother you. And we live in a country that does not care about that old gentleman, be he black, white, or Native American.
That's right. But you could tell that he was a fine old gentleman. But he just said, we can't afford that anymore. We just have to use salt and pepper.
Roy, I despise these SOBs in our government.
Yep.
Because I remember when I keep coming back to it. I don't know if you saw it when it came out or not. Back before Medicare Plan D, the prescription drug plan, kicked in, the White House put out its own numbers for a woman on fixed income. She's 70 years old, and she's bringing in $790 a month on Social Security. Okay? Well, part of that process, they said, now, this woman gets $27 a month in food stamps. Well, because of Medicare Part D kicking in, her food stamps got cut to $7.
Okay.
Because she had the added benefit of the, you know, because she wasn't just having to spend money on drugs. And now we find out that Medicare Plan D is a bigger, I mean, we all knew it was a ripoff, and it turns out it's an even bigger ripoff than what we thought.
Yeah.
Because you pay into Plan D, and it pays up to like $2,500 worth or whatever it is of drugs. At $2,500, it kicks off and doesn't pay again until $7,500.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, you're still paying that premium.
I know that.
You know, this is the kind of stuff that other peoples have gotten the pitchforks and the torches and started marching for the castle on the hill with. But not us, you know. But I'm hoping that now we're beginning to see some of this turn. Because obviously Joe Lieberman was part of the problem.
Oh, he's definitely part of the problem. I thought he was part of the problem in 2000, in 1999 and everything.
Well, when Gore nominated him, I understood right then and there it was going to be an uphill fight.
Well, I could not imagine what in the world that was all about.
Well, I'll tell you what it was about, Roy. It was about the Florida vote.
Yeah.
They thought they were going to offset Jeb Bush by having Joe Lieberman on the ticket, and that but the thing is, you know, it's about playing checkers when the other side's playing chess.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't count on the fact that the Republicans would fix it so that all of those people that they thought would be on board for Joe Lieberman would wind up voting for Pat Buchanan.
Yeah.
I mean, that still makes the little marbles inside my noggin knock together.
it was a sad time to go through all that. But the day that the United States Supreme Court ruled that he officially Bush had officially stole the 2000 election. It ain't done nothing but gone down ever since. And that is the reason that all of these people are out there squawking, and corruption and cronyism and crooks, because they said, my God, if they can steal the United States presidency, I want my part too. And they are out there raking and grabbing and gouging and getting it.
And now that it looks like the maybe the gouging and grabbing isn't going to last so much longer, man, they're grabbing and gouging faster than they ever thought they could.
That's right.
Roy, you take care. It's always good hearing from you.
Good. Thank you.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
It's our good friend Roy in Texas. I want to go now, if we could, please, Agnes, dear. I want to go to our audio of Joe. I want to go first to Tony Snow up at the top there. These are some extended cuts that our good friend Bruce Birch provided to me. This is Tony Snow. I haven't edited it. It's straight up. It is what it is. Just listen to this babbling fool trying to make it look like this isn't something terrifying for dear leader Joe Lieberman's whipping.
Primary election in Connecticut last night. I know there's a lot of concern and interest about that. Democratic voters in Connecticut have made their choice, and they have chosen Ned Lamont over Senator Lieberman. Just a couple of observations. Key leaders in the National Democratic Party have made it clear. Now, let me back up. This is a defining moment in some ways for the Democratic Party. I know,
okay.
A lot of people have tried to make this a referendum on the president. I would flip it.
Yeah.
I think
it's a defining
moment for the Democratic Party, whose national leaders now have made it clear that if you disagree with the extreme left in their party, they're going to come after you.
Pause it, please, dear.
And it is probably worth...
The extreme left in the Democratic Party has made it clear that if you don't agree with it, the extreme left, you know, all the extreme left that objects to $3.10 a gallon gasoline. The extreme left that objects to making it harder for a family that's just gone through a catastrophic illness and stands to lose their house because of their medical bills, even if they had insurance. The extreme left that objects to people like Joe Lieberman who vote to make that even harder with the monstrosity of the bankruptcy bill. The extreme left that objects to Supreme Court justices who approve of shooting young black American men in the back of the head at 15 feet when they have shown no weapon and are fleeing. You know, that extreme left. The extreme left of the Democratic Party that believes that if you get up every day and you do what your daddy and your mama taught you to do and you go to work and you try to make sure that there's food on the table for your children and your wife or your children and your husband or your children because the wife's working too. 40, 60 hours a week. The extreme left of the Democratic Party that believes that for some reason or another, if you get sick, it shouldn't destroy your family. Yeah, that extreme left, Tony Snow, you lying sack of... You blivet. You 10 pounds of... In a 5-pound onion bag, you... Let's see what else he's got to say, Agnes.
Trying to trace through some of the implications of that. One of the interesting things that happened in this Connecticut race, by the way, was there appeared to be some buyer's remorse as Election Day approached. Maybe the polls were rigged. Maybe the polls were bad. But at least the lead...
Maybe the polls were rigged. Maybe the polls were bad. Yeah, because that only happens when the polls predict that Ned Lamont is going to mop the floor with Joe Lieberman. It doesn't count when the polls predict that John Kerry wins in Ohio or that Al Gore wins in Florida. Oh, God, I hate you, Tony.
That Mr. Lamont had went from 13 points to 6 to 4 on Election Day. That indicates that even in a fairly liberal state like Connecticut, where this was the one issue, where you had a well-financed candidate who had more money than the incumbent, that you still had a 50-50.
Oh, unfair, unfair. He had more. He was well-financed. He, oh, Jesus. Did you, ooh, ah, anti-war, he's got money.
The Democratic Party on this issue. It's going to be up to Democrats to see exactly how they want to play it. I will tell you the president's position, which is the war on terror is vital. Not only...
Tony, today time. In Ohio can...
The war on terror is vital. Well, what... Okay, Tony, buddy, what about the war on the people of Iraq? You know, there's me. There's Bruce Birch. There's Guy James. There's Mark Levine. There's Dr. Bill O'Brien, John Fox, our good friend Mike Malloy, and a handful of other people out there who will occasionally, when things like that are brought up, say, Tony, you lying piece of crap, you. War on terror. There's... The war in Iraq is not a war on terror. The war in Afghanistan turns out to have not been a war on terror. There's a war on terror going on, but it is it's your boss's it is your boss's war to terrify the American people into smiling at the gas pump when they're cranking out 3 1/4 a gallon. Pay 3 1/4, the terrorists win. Ooh.
Hellman delivered a speech in which he talked about the Lieberman loss as an example of the defeatism and isolationism of the Democratic Party. It seems like, based on what we're hearing from you, this is part of a coordinated Republican effort to broaden this Lieberman race out to a more national...
Oh, time out. It's not just a Republican effort. It's... What's your name, sister? Mighty nice job you just did of repeating the talking point. Oh, just an expansion of the defeatism and isolationism of the Democratic Party. Huh. I'll be diddlied. I'm a defeatist. I'm the guy who says don't run around being afraid, and I'm the defeatist. I'm the guy who says, you know, we need to stand up and retake our place in the panoply of nations and be a leader for things like democracy and, you know, the real kind, not the kind where democracy gets a bag put over its head and a cord around its neck and dragged off to a foreign country and has stuff put under its fingernails. I mean, democracy, and human rights and feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, that kind. But no, I'm a defeatist and an isolationist. Well, leave me alone.
No, that's again. I think what you've had is you've had a lot of national figures within the Democratic Party making this point, and that's why I tried to couch it in terms of responding to the arguments that were made in that race. Again, it's up to Democrats. Is this the national message they wish to run on? If so, it's going to be something that I think the American people are going to want to hear all sides of.
Message for you to paint Democrats as the cut and run party, the defeatist
isolationist. I don't believe I used any of those terms.
Never. You'll have a dickens of a time.
Ken's running the Republican National Committee. I'm speaking for the president.
yeah, log closet Ken Melman. I'm speaking for the president. I had a special healing of colon cancer. Scumbag. I don't think he ever had it. Colon cancer couldn't live in something as filthy as Tony Snow. Oh, God. Now, do you get... It just makes me... Well, obviously, you can tell what it makes me want to do. I want to use all those words that I'd be ashamed for my poor dead mother to know I know how to use. But Okay, Agnes, we'll take a break, dear. I'll gather my wits or something. Or my rosebuds. Or gather no moss with the rolling stuff. We'll be back. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Homeland Security Advisory System is designed to provide warnings as the risk of terrorist attacks increases. If the severe condition signified in red is declared, it's recommended that you avoid public gathering places or other high-profile locations. Public transportation may be impacted, and non-essential public and government facilities may be closed. Go to the Homeland Security website at www.dhs.gov for more information. This message has been brought to you by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida broadcasters, and this radio station.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Bruce Birch radio program, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m., connecting people.
Listen, not only do we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, sir.
It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's worst bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Swig a root beer. I'm all better now. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On a Wednesday night. It feels very much like a Monday for me because I'm out and gone Monday and Tuesday. Sorry about that. Won't let it happen again anytime soon, I hope. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm okay. You?
Good, good. I'm drinking a beer myself.
Yeah, yours is the good kind. I got the.
There's probably a root somewhere in there. Don't you think?
You know, well, maybe.
It's Guinness, man.
Oh, okay. Wow, well, yeah, stuff. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's not beer, that's heaven.
Right. Tony Snow, man, wouldn't you like that? I mean, how can a guy live with himself?
I'd like to buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth, personally, but, you know, that's me.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be a bad move, because he thinks he's worth a lot. But I'll tell you, I couldn't be happier, man. I stayed up and, you know, watched Lieberman concede. And I think it's a real good move. I think that, and somebody was alluding to it earlier, you know, I think we've put the DLC on notice. Or certainly we, the people of Connecticut. But I think we were all involved in our support on the internet.
Well,
I
think that's one of the things that made it so important, Wayne, is the fact that campaign got nationalized. And frankly, I'm all for nationalizing important congressional campaigns, be they Senate or House of Representatives.
Most definitely.
Tomorrow evening, if everything works out as planned, we're going to have a gentleman on the program that I hope we can help nationalize his campaign.
Well, and I think that's a very good thing to do.
Mike Callahan.
Which reminds me, are we going to have Timber's address? I mean, I'm thinking I should send the guy $50. If you remember, a few months ago, I sent Ned Lamont $50.
Yeah, and you and hey,
look
you know,
what happened.
You got some bang for your bucks.
Hey, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I won the election for him, man.
Yeah, damn right you
all
did.
All right, so let's get Timber on and whoever else, you know. But then we have to let people know how to get a hold of him.
Well, I think he's still in the talking about it phases, and they're.
Timber?
Yeah.
Well, I think he should keep talking.
Yeah, he's going to.
Right.
And we've got him posted on the Horn page, and we'll be hearing from him again as things progress, because this bus tour sounds like a hoot.
Well, and listen, I mean, the guy is he's no baloney, you know, he's no BS. That's a mature man, you know, so you could trust a man like that.
Yeah.
Don't you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's done his stuff. He admits he's a human being. You know, because you know these people that run for president and try to, you know, I was born in a log cabin that I chopped the trees down and built myself while I was in the womb. You know, enough of that.
Exactly. And listen, you need advocates like that. You know, like people could think of them what they may or whatever. But Al Sharpton brought a lot of issues to the last presidential debate.
You're darn right, and so did Dennis Kucinich.
Damn right.
John,
and, you know, we need people that are willing to stand up and tell the truth. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're just telling the truth. And that's what Democrats are. And, you know, that's what, I'm very, very excited about this whole thing. I really am. And I'm going to tell you what, I think Lamont can win this thing.
Oh.
You know, because they talk about all the independent voters. Well, there's more independent voters in Connecticut than anybody else, and that's true. But, you know, the sad part is the majority of the independent voters are also against this stupid war.
Well, not only that, but there may be independent voters, Wayne, but the guy who's running as an independent is anything but that.
Well, he used to be a Democrat, right?
Well, he used to say he was.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, he's not. There is not an iota's difference between him and George Bush. And, frankly, if George Bush yells froggy, Joe Lieberman says how high. How independent is that?
I don't know about the iota thing. I might have to, you know, study that a little bit.
Well, okay. But, you know, it's a Greek letter. Go have a look.
You know.
But, no, seriously. Joe Lieberman has shown no independence. He was right there in lockstep with the Republicans on the bankruptcy bill, the estate tax thing. It was, you know, he said,
on vouchers.
Yeah, and I think we ought to look at the president's plan to privatize Social Security.
Was he not also there on Social Security?
Exactly.
Called reform?
Sure.
Yeah, privatizing.
Yeah, can't stand much more clarification or privatization.
No. I mean, you know. Anything worse than that is democratization.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, all right. But he was there, you know, an independent voter wants an independent
candidate. My perker was perking all over the stove.
Oh, that's no good.
No. It'll be good coffee, though.
Well, what are you doing in the coffee? You know, stay with one or the other, man. You know, you're in the Guinness. What are you doing in the coffee?
Well, I got to, you know, because you drink a couple of beers, then you have a cup of coffee, maybe sneak a piece of cake and go to bed.
That's right.
Man, that's living.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, but, you know, then again, I'm all decaffeinated. You know, I get near a cup of coffee and I'm awake for 8 days. So, yeah.
Well, we all have our own crosses to bear.
Yes, and our own bears to cross.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And I am a bear on caffeine. But yeah, if you can go to bed after a couple of cups of coffee, more power to you, brother.
There were a lot of exciting things because of the Lamont thing.
Yeah.
A radio talk show host was shocked that Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson were standing behind Ned Lamont.
Shocked?
Oh, yes. I mean, why weren't they down with Cynthia McKinney?
Oh, for God's sake.
If I had cell phone service where I was at on the turnpike, I'd have called them, asked them, you mean they should be with their own people? Because that's what
separate but
saying.
Equal, maybe?
Huh?
Separate but equal, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. But why ain't you down there helping your own there? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
oh, God. I tell you.
You know,
but it was an exciting night, man.
Oh, it was terribly exciting. And the fact of the matter is that the Republicans are already working real hard. All the Democrats have is anti-war.
Well, listen, you got to understand. I'm going to tell you what. I believe these people have really been put on notice, and they're scared to death, which means, you know, we should all realize that and buck up because these people are going to get nasty. But we got to hold our ground. They don't have any, you know, their track record is very, very, very poor. Very poor.
Well, and they've got something else to be scared about, Wayne. And it's
what's
this.
What's that, brother?
You know, there's been stories in the media the last couple of weeks about the fact that nobody else may be willing to call George Bush a war criminal, but the Bush administration is reading not the international, but the federal 1996 war crime statute that the Republicans passed very, very seriously. And that's one of the things that's scaring them. There is a distinct possibility that if we, you know, that as we take power back, they're scared to death that we might start nosing around into stuff that, you know, Democrats have no business in. And the next thing you know, George Bush is standing in a dock somewhere, and it's not over some casual sexual escapade. It's about the illegal torture and killing of thousands and hundreds of thousands of human beings. They got a lot to be scared of, Wayne.
And they should be scared.
I want them terrified.
But listen, like I say, you also have to realize and be prepared for what scared people do. You know, scared people could be the scariest people there are.
Well, that's that. Yeah, and
so you got to be prepared.
Bullies are the loudest and the meanest.
I think that, you know, somebody was saying that, you know, they put Lieberman out because of the war, the Connecticut, you know, and it's not the Democrats. It's the American people.
Yeah.
The American people drove Joe Lieberman out of office and partly was his support of the war. You know, it's time for the war to be over. Bring the guys home and, you know, whatever happens is going to happen, whether we leave now or in 10 years. They're in a civil war and.
Yeah,
let them straighten it out. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and not just that, but yeah, there wasn't the only.
I think we should offer to try to help them since we ruined the place.
Yeah, you know, at least take some of the money that Paul Bremer lost in the couch at the Coalition Provisional Authority. And,
well, they might still. Well, you know, somebody brought that couch home in a duffel bag.
Yeah, give it a good shake, and there might be some money in it still. But no, that you're absolutely right. But the other thing, you know, Lieberman hadn't done anything for Connecticut in 100 years. Nothing. Connecticut was like, you know, 40th or 45th or something in terms of senators bringing home a little pork once in a while. And I'm not in favor of pork, but you know, you got to look like you're at least trying. But he was busy being presidential. You know, you got to remember that Joe met him. You know, he was running for president and vice president and doing it and kissing Bush and, you know.
And you know what? Another thing. Did you watch any of it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was watching, I don't know, when it was, you know, like, well, it was 52-48, you know, from 30 precincts to 100. You know, it was always that margin.
Yeah.
And that was kind of scary. Watching it stay the same.
Because you knew
what I mean?
Yeah, because you knew the other shoe was going to drop.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking, well, we'll drop one here, drop one there, and all of a sudden we'll drop three. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that didn't happen.
No, and I think voters proved their ability to maybe defeat the black boxes.
I agree.
I hope that's what that was.
Well, it's a very encouraging thing to me. Very encouraging.
It is, but we got to stay with the momentum that it formed.
Yes, we do.
You know, there's a lesson here. When you've got them on the run, you chase them down and trample them.
There is a momentum. There's momentum in a lot of places, you know. And, well, you know, I'm not going to play games. You were at that labor thing.
Yeah.
People are fed up. People are ready to do something. People are ready to make a change.
And people understand that the other side is actively working to stop everything that they've worked and fought for.
Well, exactly. And that's how, you know, when I talk to people, that's exactly what we talk about. Or I talk about is like, listen, I'm 100% for working people's issues. And the fact of the matter is that this administration, this whatever it is that is in control of our government, is the most anti-worker, first of all, definitely anti-union. But, you know, these are, well, they're the most anti-working people administration I've seen in, I don't know,
a generation.
My lifetime.
Yeah, a generation. I mean,
yes,
this is,
you know. Well, I know so, you know.
Yeah, we're talking about going back to the days of Taft-Hartley and stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, previous to that, even.
And, you know, you get in a lot of trouble with when you're trying to talk to these people because, you know, as a union representative, it shocked me to find out that, you know, in a lot of places, well, sometimes the registered Republicans in our own union outnumber the Democrats in some locals.
And that's got to be addressed.
That does have to be addressed, but it's a...
You know, I got
it's
one,
a touchy thing.
Yeah, but Wayne, I got one simple question. What's a Republican ever done for a working person?
Well, and that's what I tell them. Look, I don't know what you hear. My issues are working people's issues.
Yeah.
It doesn't include abortion, choice, no choice, blah, blah, blah. I'm, you know, what I'm concentrating on is real, which those things turn out to be. But, you know, if you empower yourself, you could control all those other things. And that, you know, that's what we have to do.
Well, it's a simple enough plan. All it needs is hard work.
Well, you know what? I want to remind you of the first time I ever talked to you, I think you told me that this administration is the union's best friend. And it confused me. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's proven to be true.
More true every day.
Union involvement is growing.
Yes, it is.
It's growing in this state. It's growing in others. And there's an upswell of people who understand that if left to their own devices, everything that they hold dear, everything that means their American way of life, will be taken from them.
Yes. And a signal of the change happened in Connecticut this weekend.
I believe it was. You know.
Well, and you know, in many ways, in Georgia also.
To a certain extent, yeah, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's what we want. You know, you to do and how you should.
Yeah.
You know, we want you to be for the people, and if you know, if you're messing up the thing, we're going to get rid of you.
Well, our good friend,
it's very encouraging.
It is encouraging, and our good friend Lilo from Pittsburgh in the chat room just said that we should be shouting at the top of our lungs that the reason Lieberman lost is because he was elected as a Democrat and changed his stripes, and we don't want or need Dinos.
Couldn't have said that any better myself. Tell that guy from Pittsburgh I'll be in Aliquippa on Friday, Saturday, and depending how things go.
Lilo's no guy, but I'll let her know.
Oh, who is it?
Lilo.
Well, let her know even that much more then.
Aliquip abound. All right, Wayne. Aliquip. Take care.
All right, brother.
Later.
Bye.
Bye now. Man, Agnes, you let me roll over the news.
You know what? I'm just here for the free food.
Yeah, I know. You're here for the beer.
Excuse me?
Yeah, you're only here for the beer. Let's the heck with it. Let's go to the phones. Let's keep rolling. This is too much fun. Our good friend Joe Vecchio calling in from somewhere around Chicago.
Hey, Rob.
How you doing?
Pretty good. I heard the news. You know, I only have like about an hour online now, so I really have to kind of get the news as quickly as I can. But
I understand.
I was so happy to hear about Lieberman. Good riddance to bad garbage as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the poop on the lines that I heard was that he may try to run as a Republican, or at the very least, they might finance his campaign if he tries to run as an independent.
Well, he filed his petition signatures today an independent. Yeah, you know, what? I mean, that's just the epitome of sleaze in my book, Joe.
Yeah, you know, and you wonder why we don't like him. And you know, thank goodness for Reid and Pelosi and the other leaders to release that statement, basically saying, you know, we're supporting Lamont. Lamont is the choice. He's the Democrat. And I'm glad for that. And, you know, if Lieberman wants to run, I think even in a three-way he would lose. But he has no more party affiliation. So he's not, he, you know, he better not get any support from any Democrats anymore.
Yeah, but see, he thinks that he will run out, and this is the, you know, you can see it, all over the country, Joe, but nasty party splitting after a primary is one of the dirtiest things you can do. If my candidate does not win the primary, I feel, if I'm that passionate about it, I'll stay away from the general election on that race.
Mm-hmm.
But I will not actively go out and work for the other side. And that is what Joe Lieberman is doing.
And you know the thing about it is, as nasty as Republican inside politics get, and they get real nasty, I don't recall ever having heard of a Republican doing this, running as an independent after he loses a primary. And even as far as the nasty stuff they do, as far as Democrats are concerned, and if you read about what the college Republicans do, that's like their training ground. And that's some of the nastiest politicking you'll ever see. But once the dust is settled, everybody just kind of accepts it, and Lieberman not accepting it, it just goes to show that it's all about him, baby.
Well, it's a level of almost, you know, you and I are prone to getting a little inside baseball going on the ancient civilizations. It's a little too Roman for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
How dare the plebs throw me out of the Senate?
Well, if Lieberman wanted to do the honorable thing by Roman ways, we can find a nice little sword handy.
Yeah, and a, you know, warm bath. Yeah.
You know, and you can get that taken care of. That's the honorable. And, you know, the McKinney thing, I didn't hear the entirety of the conversation from before. I heard someone mention Georgia. But I know exactly what happened in McKinney's case. She got voted out by Republicans, literally, because in Georgia you have the open primaries. That you don't have
to. Oh, I had forgotten about that.
You don't have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary in Georgia. And that's exactly what happened with Majette. They found, you know, they found another person, and the Republicans crossed over in droves. In droves, because I lived in the 4th District. I know that district, and I guarantee you.
So Cynthia was your congressperson.
That's right. She was my congressperson. And I didn't meet her personally, but I used to work with her press secretary, Richard Searcy, a very nice gentleman, when we were doing some election fraud work. So, you know, I know that district, and they would never vote out Cynthia. It's one of the bluest of blue districts, but they do have a few Republicans living there, and if they go over and cross over, guess what? And that's what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, does the Republican nominee have a prayer down there then?
No, not really.
So they just got themselves a Lieberman-flavored Democrat? I mean, this attorney that won the primary now, the runoff?
No, nothing about this gentleman.
Henry something or another.
I know absolutely nothing about him. I don't know. I know, you know, when they voted for Majette, I mean, Majette wasn't a McKinney, but she wasn't a Lieberman. You know, she was kind of in between. And it was obvious that she let her ambitions get the better of her by deciding to run for the Senate, because that was a seat she could have kept.
Yeah.
And, in fact, last I heard, she was running for, she was running in this election with public service commissioner or something like that.
Right, right.
Some rinky-dink little job down there. And it's like, man, how the mighty have fallen.
But you see, this is one of the reasons I object to this open registration or whatever you want to call it you see it all over the country, but I'm familiar with it in the South. You know, if you're a Democrat, register as a Democrat. If you're a Republican, register as a Republican, and, you know, be happy and to deal with and campaign for whoever it is that your party puts up, or not your party, but whoever runs under your party's banner.
Right. I agree. I hate when I first heard about it, because we didn't have it in New York. When I first heard about it, I thought it was ridiculous. If you're a Democrat, you want Democrats choosing who your candidates are. You don't want the opposition. And I know the Republicans feel the same way.
And the funny thing is that was all put in place many, many years ago to stop Republican politics. You know, it's one of our failings down there. And, you know, issues of race played into it. And
the Democrats back then are the Republicans of now. See what I'm saying? Because they all switched over. Once, you know, it's the Republicans who are waving the rebel flag now. And there's so much of it. I mean, that's one of the reasons why Sonny Perdue got in down there to begin with, is because he told them anyway that he was going to bring back the Confederate symbol on the flag. With all the other problems that Georgia is having, and all the important issues that are going on in that state, which is a very big and important state, mind you. I think it's like number four or number five in the nation as far as electoral votes are concerned. It's high up there. A lot of people live there. But of all with all the things going on, what do they care about is their stupid flag.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how people are down there. I mean, it's not so much in Atlanta, which tends to be rather blue, except out in the burbs areas. But around, you get out of there, you get around to Macon, and you get out.
Goweta County.
Yeah, exactly. You get out there, and, you know, God almighty, some of these people, you know. And we, you know, we used to joke about going to Birmingham because we had friends in Birmingham. And we used to drive, when you drive across the border is when you cross the date line. And we used to say, yeah, Birmingham, where you set your clocks back an hour and your mindsets back a century.
Easy.
You know. Actually, my friend Dave had a better argument. He said that the welcome sign on the Alabama border should have said, welcome to Alabama, the following constitutional amendments no longer apply. List them out.
Well, there's, I mean, you know, there's some truth in it. But the thing is, with electoral politics in the South have been flipped on their head, and they are a product of a couple of hundred years worth of race hate and deliberate disenfranchisement, not only of African American people, but of poor whites.
Right.
And you know, the business with the flip flopping on the, and West Virginia has toyed with that. The Democratic Party's been looking into it in this state as to whether or not to let registered independents vote in our primary, and I say screw them. You know, be something. Stand up for something. Don't stand there in the middle of the road and say, I'm going to wait and vote for the least, you know, where I've got at least a 50% chance of winning. Get out and fight for somebody. Believe in something.
Even, you know, I mean, even if you lose, go out and fight.
Right. You know, care. I mean, it was a huge turnout in Connecticut, Joe, and it was 50%. And that was huge. That was an unheard of turnout for a primary.
And only 50%.
Yeah, so 52% of 50% of the voters who were registered selected Ned Lamont.
Well, what was?
And I'm glad they did, but I would like to see that be a function of 80, 90, 95% of the registered voters, and I would like to see voter registration be a matter of course, where it was almost impossible not to be a registered voter.
Well, you have to understand, with Republicans in particular, they're not interested in the democratic process. They are power freaks and control freaks.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as...
And they,
you know,
hate the franchise, Joe.
They hate the entire concept that anybody has any power to do anything with their lives except for those special few that are the motor of the world or whatever the heck they're calling themselves in that any particular time. You know, and so they really, you know, they're working very hard to prevent people from voting. They're very good at it. They've done a very good job. And, you know, and you were talking about percentage. What was the percentage nationally with Mr. Bush? I mean, what was the turnout for the 2004 election? I mean, we thought it was rather high, but it was still only, what, about 30-40% of the population?
Well, of the population.
Of the registered voters.
Well, you know, it might have gotten close to 60, maybe 62% nationwide. But then again, at that point, you get into this sort of unpleasant territory of trying to remember, you know, about all the spoiled ballots in Ohio and the spoiled ballots in New Mexico and the spoiled ballots in Florida. You're right. The Republican Party is actively engaged in keeping people away from the polls. That's why rules develop like, you know, rainy day elections favor Republicans, because the fewer people come out operates to their benefit, because their people will come out rain, snow, sleet, shine, hell, high water, rapture, you know, wait a minute, Jesus, I got to vote first. You know, that's the way they operate.
And God bless them. That's, you know, I admire him for that, because they go out and they fight for their principles. Their principles are retarded, murderous, dangerous, but they'll go out there and fight for them. And we have a national party that's run by little local fiefdoms sometimes that doesn't seem to care about anything but holding on to their position. This is something that Governor Dean used to talk about. He was saying that the Democrats that he talked to when he went to Washington to talk to them, they were happy being number two. So long as they knew where their place was, they were happy. And that's just wrong, especially if you're the number two. And, you know, the Democrats pull their share of shenanigans when they ran the Congress. I mean, I'm not going to say they're saints. And I like to say right now that I'm a liberal, but not necessarily a Democrat, if you know what I mean. But I'm glad the grassroots is getting out there and getting rid of these bleep dinos like Joe Lieberman. And Lieberman in particular. I mean, I remember when they were holding that picture of him kissing Bush up, and that was a campaign ad. That's the way you got to do it.
Yeah, it is. And I'm waiting for sensible people. I got a list, Joe, to be honest. I got a list. I'm waiting for sensible people to, last week I interviewed Brian Moore running as an independent against Bill Nelson in Florida. Because, you know, Catherine Cruella DeVille Harris has just lost her mind and, you know, couldn't get elected dog catcher. But Brian Moore's running as an independent against Bill Nelson, you know, and there's Bill Nelson out there at the end of the week voting in the Senate for cloture on the bill that would have given Paris Hilton a tax break in exchange for giving working people a $2 an hour raise over the next 3 years.
Over the next 3 years.
I got no time for Bill Nelson. I got no time for Ben Nelson up in Nebraska. That guy's poison. I'm waiting for Nebraskans to smarten up.
Is that possible?
Stop that.
I'm sorry.
You're closer to Nebraska. They can find you, Joe. And they're big and corn-fed. And they brook no crap.
Well, you know, let me talk about this real quick before I forget. I did start work last Wednesday.
Well, good.
And the job pays $9.50 an hour, and people don't like me to talk about stuff like that. But you know what? That's who I am. That's what I do. And it's a very nice job. I basically get to keep to myself. And I've been going out looking for apartments now. And I've run into some very interesting situations. I met a guy today. Seemed like real nice. But I think we most misunderstood each other. I'm basically looking for an apartment by myself. Okay? I do not want a roommate.
No.
I mean, I like the Thane. He's a great guy. But my life for the next couple of years has to be, apart from the radio show, I go to work, you know, I come home and I do my online stuff. And apart from that, except for a very rare interaction with, say, you know, maybe Ben Birch, he wants to come down and visit, I don't want to know nobody. I don't want to see nobody. Okay, I basically have to focus on getting my finances back in order, living as frugally as possible. And, you know, just the only socializing I want to do is online socializing. And again, the radio show. Once I get
eyes on the prize, Joe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm running into people who, and it was, he was a nice enough guy, but the place I went into was totally immaculate. And it was so immaculate, I was afraid to touch anything. You know, like living, you know, going to visit your aunt's house or your mom's house or something like that, and trying to live there, and your mother has everything just in its place, and you're afraid, you know, that if you move something, you know, something's going to be said. And I really don't want that in my life right now. I mean, I'm not the dirtiest person in the world, but I'm not the cleanest person in the world, and I just want to have a place where my own mess is my own damn mess.
Well, you know, Hemingway referred to it as a clean, well-lighted space. Maybe, you know, yeah, maybe it's a dimmer, little schmutzy kind of space. And if that's what makes you happy, man, follow your bliss.
Well, sure. Well, you know, that's basically what I'm looking to do right now for the moment. I mean, in a couple of years or so, when I'm a little more financially settled and everything is cooler, then I can, you know, look at my options then. But I have to stay focused right now. And I want, you know, and I hate the idea that I can't get on the air right now, because I really do like to talk, because I'm loving Chicago. I haven't been able to take advantage of it as much as I'd like because I'm flat broke all the time, but I'm really loving Chicago.
Well, you're seeing it at its very best right now, I think.
Yeah, I think it's come really well. I've heard, you know,
because dead of winter starts Labor Day.
I'm sorry?
Dead of winter starts Labor Day.
Oh, I'm not worried about that. What I'm noticing is people talking on the buses here, and it's great. You know, when I go to Atlanta, I get on the bus, generally I'm like the only white guy on the bus. And it's refreshing to get on a bus here or get on a train here and have all sorts of mix. I mean, white guys with suits, black people, Mexicans, Thais, everybody, a little bit everybody. And I love that. That's the kind of environment that I want to live in. And it's not like New York. New York is, you know, everybody's going, everybody's pushing and shoving. Chicago is much more laid back. And I'm really, really enjoying it. And I'm looking forward to spending the next couple of years here. But, you know, the thing about it is, I still miss my wife. And I go out, and I go to a lot of these places. I went to the planetarium the other way because the library gives free passes. to a lot of these museums. I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, wow.
And you got to catch them, though, because the big ones, you know, everybody's always got them out. The aquarium is the one I want to see. But, you know, I went around the planetarium, and you know what? It wasn't as fun without somebody there to be with me.
No.
You know, you're just walking around there by yourself, and you feel like kind of a goonie bird. So I'm going to kind of curtail that a little bit. But there are going to be, you know, the places that I want to go. And who knows, maybe in a couple of years I'll hook up with somebody else. I don't know. I'm not going to predict. I'm not going to say one way or the other. But the thing about it is I think I picked a good place to go to because I think a lot of the economic stress is going to go by Chicago. It's already pretty much passed by. I've got the kind of job that, thankfully, is not going to be outsourced. This is what happened in my last couple of jobs, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe things will turn around. But the sad thing is that I have to turn my mind off as much as possible to everything else that's going on around me. And I don't want to. You know what I mean? I want to pay more attention to what was going on in the McKinney race, you know, the Lamont-Lieberman thing. I wanted to write more about that on the blog. And it pains me that I have to stay so focused on this. But like you said, you got to do what you got to do. And but I am looking forward to getting back on the air, and I wanted to let all my listeners know that I'm not abandoning them. I know I've been off for a long time, and I know you guys are holding my spot for me, and it's really great. But I'm just at the point where I'm tired of living by the kindness of strangers, as Blanche
DuBois
said.
Sure.
And I got to get that going. But I am really, really happy to see what happened in Connecticut. I am so happy that we made the first step towards getting rid of this SOB. And I really, you know, I developed a dislike for Lieberman very quickly during the presidential campaign in 2000 when he would not press Cheney on. People remember that, what Cheney was talking about, you know, going, you know, his work at Halliburton. And Lieberman made a comment, well, I guess everybody would like, you know, the kind of retirement pay you're getting. And Cheney, you know, retorted, well, you know, had nothing to do with government, which was BS. Everything to do with government. Every job he's ever had in life, I believe, has been because of government.
Exactly.
So, you know, and I'm tired of these Republicans playing this game. The thing here seems to think that they're on the verge of imploding. I'm hoping that's the case. I've heard other people talk about it. Although, to be perfectly honest, and I was talking about this with Agnes before I came on here, Dilmon from the Whiskey Bar, one of the best blogs out there.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he went into a real nice screed the other day, and I almost kind of agree with him. He's saying, you know, in 2006, I don't want to win, is what he said. Because what happens if we win, we're not going to win very much. And what the Republicans will turn around and do is start blaming us for everything, as if they weren't already blaming us for everything now, even though they control the whole government, you know. Republicans are going to turn around and blame us for everything and use that as a push to bring everything back in 2008. So he was at the point, and again, I don't think I entirely agree with him, but I understand his point. You know, let's let them run this thing into the ground just to show how horrible the Republican Party is, and maybe we can tear it down and, you know, just destroy it so that it can rebuild itself into reasonable conservatives, because you have to have reasonable conservatives. With the Thane and I talked about this, we both agree that you need a liberal progressive majority with just enough of a conservative minority to keep the brakes on a little bit. But whenever
you said principled conservatives, and that's the big deal. Somebody that's all wrapped up over marriage issues or monuments or whether or not there's a cross on a rock in a hill in San Diego, that's not a conservative.
That's a religious fanatic. And that's somebody who's saying or doing anything to get elected.
And they're capable of saying or doing anything. They will start wars, Joe. They will let an entire social segment of this nation go straight to hell if they think it's going to enhance their power.
If they thought they could get away with it, they'd kill you and they'd kill me. They would, a heartbeat, if they had the opportunity. You know?
I know.
And that's the way they are. And that's the Democrats' problem, is that they don't understand that.
These people are dangerous, Joe.
What was Lincoln, the Cooper Hall speech?
Cooper Union?
Cooper Union speech. Where he was talking about the Southerners, and he was just basically, you know, and I don't want to get into the whole anti-Southern thing, but the attitude that he was discussing is the attitude of Republicans today. What Lincoln was saying was that you know, they won't be satisfied with us just, you know, leaving them alone on slavery. They want us to support it as strongly as they do and work with them on it. And even then, they probably won't even be convinced.
Yeah. They are. And the religious fanatics that have this nation, well, there's only one way to deal with them, and that is to marginalize them. And there's only one way to marginalize them, Joe, and that is to get normal, hardworking, decent people registered and out there participating every time the polls. If the polls open to elect the county surveyor, get those hardworking people out there to the polls for that.
And on
then,
top of that, you have to make sure that they understand that if the election fraud, which is going on, continues, that they have to take to the streets.
That day may come.
That day may come. And, you know, because the Diebold machines are not everywhere. The Diebold machines, they're not everywhere. You know?
Yeah.
And the Republicans are very good at getting just enough majority, because the Republicans understand 51% of the power is 100%. 51% of the election is 100% of the power. They understand that, and Democrats don't. You know, we've been taking a lot of moral victory or moral losses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where we lose, but we fought the good fight. And a lot of people were acting like, oh, that was enough. And it's not enough. 49% is 0%.
Moral victories still go in the L column, Joe.
That's right. Exactly.
Joe, your spot is safe. We're waiting for you to get all set up and come back. And make sure, you know, stay in touch, will you, brother?
Oh, definitely. You know, Wednesdays are my day off, so I'll try to call every Wednesday. It is prayer night, after all.
It is prayer night.
As soon as I can get.
All right. Thanks a lot. Later, Joe.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now. Our good friend Joe Vecchio, firmly ensconced in Chicago and working for that better life, chasing the American dream. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, straight to the phones. I want to share something with you right now. Our good friend Bruce Burge put together a little something for Joe Lieberman, and I think you're going to enjoy this because it fits, it works. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights, meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of confidence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
You know, Joe Vecchio made a very cogent point. Wearing Joe Lieberman out with the Kiss was very important, and it's the kind of in-your-face politics that the Democratic Party had damned well better learn and get up on right quick. The days of going on vacation to Martha's Vineyard and windsurfing while you get swift-boated are damned well over. This is Head On. I'm Bob. Let's go straight to the phones. David in Tennessee had another thought for us. Welcome back, David.
Well, Bob, I had to get back on for a moment, and there, before I mention my cautionary tale for you, the idea that we get, like Kerry, we go vacationing with the governor. Let's just make sure that good grief, Lieberman never gets another chance. Let's just do that. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the guy that gets 86 from a bar and the Polaroid is on, you know, packed up, taped to the mirror.
Do not let him through the door.
Exactly. The Democratic Party needs to act like a good bouncer. Wait a second, that guy's up over the bar. No, you're not coming back in here.
We done told you once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The next time it involves things you don't want to think about. Now, a few minutes ago, I think I heard you bristle a bit and stand up for Birmingham, didn't I?
Yeah, there was some bristling.
Well, I got a few hairs standing up on the back of my neck about Chicago weather.
Well, look, I mean, it is what it is.
Having lived there 3 years, I think I know potentially more about it than you do. Bad weather does not strike Chicago at Labor Day, Bob.
It's the day after.
Bob, dadgummit, you're going to make me really angry. Let me explain something to you. A man that I revered, a co-worker, really nice man, lived to be 70 years old, never lived anywhere but Chicago, Illinois, told me when I moved there, October in Chicago is our reward for having survived the previous winter. October is a glorious, wonderful month. Now, it hits the fan in the middle of November, that's for damn sure, but it is not at Labor Day.
Well, actually, I was operating on a broader definition of Louis Grizzard's life in Chicago, because he said, you know, he's the one who famously penned that Chicago has two seasons, dead of winter and 4th of July.
It must have been an exceptionally unusual year, because as a true son of the South, I moved to Chicago in March, and there was this horrific April, but summer in Chicago and fall in Chicago is idyllic, because, I mean, think about it, Bob. In August, if you were a resident in, you know, say the middle of Alabama, what would you pay for a day when the high was 82 and the...
And the low was sleeping porch weather?
And the humidity was about 28%, and that night it went down to 49%, and you had about 4 months of that in a row.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And, you know, I kid. There's nowhere in this country that I don't think is absolutely wonderful, David. It's just, my God, to be in Chicago for, you know, what is it, the Taste of Chicago, the thing, the fest on the lake where it's, you know, just wall-to-wall.
Baby Pier, been there, done that, lost the T-shirt. Let's not go into that story. It was perfect. Well, I had to call in, and I'm not going to take any more time than this, but I'm sorry. The Democratic Party needs to be that good bouncer at the door. Hey, Joe, look, picture's over the bar. You got a little history going on here, partner. Go down the street. They don't know you there.
You can sit on the bar stool at the end and rave to your heart's content.
But not here. Don't push it. That's what needs to happen. That, I believe, is what is going to happen. I think Connecticut, you know, should there be, you know, buckets of Republican money come Joe's way, which there probably will be.
Look, if they've got $100,000 or $1 million for the Green candidate in Pennsylvania, David, they've got a bank for Joe.
Well, they've got a, you know, they got a couple of banks worth for a good kisser.
Well, you know, I just got an email from one listener who said he heard somewhere that there was a letter from Karl Rove to Joe that said, the boss wants me to let you know that we want you to win. We'll do anything we can to help. And I have no trouble at all believing that, David. None whatsoever.
I don't either. You know, I don't either. And maybe Melman sent him a, you know, a poison pen letter, leave my man alone. And on that note, next call.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Later, David. I won't slander Chicago anymore.
Oh, well, yeah, give it a shot. I'll call again.
Okay. See ya.
See ya.
Later. And Richard calling from California. Hey, Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our weather.
Yeah.
Nasty again, but not too nasty. I don't like hot weather.
Well, hot weather, you know, what? You're around Berkeley, right?
I'm very close to Berkeley. I'm about three cities to the north.
And hot weather there is 85 degrees?
Yeah.
No relief in sight? Yeah.
Well, not too bad. I mean, it's going to come down a little tomorrow. But, you know, the topic on my mind happens to be Bill Frist.
Oh, dear. One of our favorites.
Yeah. You were talking, you know, I'm listening behind a few days, and you were talking to somebody else about Bill Frist for a while, and I was thinking, wait a minute, he's a doctor, right?
Yeah. Heart, not just, you know, not just any old country GP with the horse and buggy. He's an open heart transplant surgeon, we're told.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, what's the business about his family's big investment in Hospital Corporation of America?
That's not their investment. That's their personal piggy bank. They own it. It's theirs.
Okay.
And they, I mean, HCA has been busted more at least two or three times that I can think of for Medicare fraud. He's up there. He's all right to life and everything. And HCA does abortions every day of the week all over the country. You know, it's the absolute monogram of his abject hypocrisy.
Now, I just heard a few days ago that there was some kind of a merger between HCA and some other huge hospital corporation?
Well, they're putting HCA on the blocks. I didn't know that the merger had gone down. I didn't see that, but I did know that, they kind of had to because Hospital Corporation of America, I think, is going to wind up being the cash cow for Bill Frist's presidential run.
Oh, boy. And here we are talking about single-payer health. And
yeah.
This guy's consolidating, right?
Yeah. I mean, we tend to get sort of myopic, Richard, because we look at the media and we go, gee whiz, we're down to 6 corporations controlling everything we see, hear, and read. And we look at, we talked about it Friday night. We look at music labels and, we're down to 6 corporations controlling everything that we put on the CD player.
Mm.
We're down to how many oil companies?
I can't keep track.
But it's a downward can't keep track. You can't keep track of the cotton picking mergers.
Well, there's something else that's kind of got my head spinning about the oil companies is, let me give you an example. The thing is, you don't know what company you're really buying gas from.
Oh, no, you don't.
Sometimes, it's like we had this horrible corporation here in California, Unocal.
Right.
They were the worst polluter of San Francisco Bay ever. And they had 2 refineries. They sold their retail division. So their gasoline brand is 76. Well, they sold that to one company, and then they sold the refining operation to another company named Tosco.
And then at one point, the Chinese government tried to buy Unocal's exploration services.
Oh, so they did. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I remember.
It reminds me of Dubai Ports, right?
Yeah. Well, it was sort of a precursor of that, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And the same thing with what's their name? I'm trying to remember the name of this oil company. They owned their own oil fields in Alaska.
Oh, that's not Citgo. That's Venezuela. I'm stumped at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not. They sort of undersell everybody else, even now.
But when a tanker truck takes off from where I am in West Virginia and drives to the terminus, it may be buying gas from BP. It may be buying gas from Royal Dutch Shell. It may be buying gas from Exxon.
That's correct. I did a little project for Chevron Pipeline a few years ago. And Chevron Pipeline is a separate business from Chevron, the oil company.
Sure.
And what it is, a pipeline is a common carrier. And in this case, and the way it works, they carry gasoline. And the way it works is that people put gasoline in and other people take gasoline out.
Right. And gasoline is gasoline and the molecules aren't choosy.
That's right. So
yeah.
I said, well, how do you tell, Gulf's gasoline from Chevron's gasoline, from somebody else's gasoline? He says, well, you don't.
You can't.
So what's the difference between one and the other? He says, nothing.
Right. There's some selectivity with, I suppose, with Citgo, but even they wind up in the same situation. I used to feel better about buying from Citgo than anybody else because I knew I was buying ultimately at least some significant portion of Venezuelan gasoline.
Okay. What they said was that the gasolines differ from each other in what they call the additive package.
Mm-hmm.
Those chemicals that they put in.
Right.
Here in California, they put in something that's called an oxygenator, which can be either MBTE or ethanol.
Right.
Either one.
And MTBE is a terrible environmental poison.
Oh, yeah. And they've all gone to it, by the way.
Yeah. Well, they were mandated by federal law to do so. You mentioned Unocal a minute ago.
I can never hear Unocal's name without remembering that, you know, there was a reason that the Chinese wanted their exploration services, Richard, and part of that had to do with the fact that Unocal had been particularly successful in making inroads and exploiting the situation in the Caspian Sea Basin. As far back as the Clinton administration, there were pipeline plans that ran from the Caspian Sea Basin through Afghanistan down to Pakistan to the sea, and it was that pipeline deal that when the Bush administration early, I think it was May 2001, had the Taliban over to Houston, you know, wined them, dined them, well, I guess not wined, but opiumed them, or not, well, but anyway, they gave them the Bush administration gave the Taliban $43 million as a sort of a carrot for having cut down on the opium production in Afghanistan, and at the same time explained to them that where this pipeline deal was concerned with Unocal, that they, and this was the quote, "We will give you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. You choose." And within 10 months of that, we installed one of the Unocal executives who had been a principal in those negotiations as president of Afghanistan. His name is Hamid Karzai.
Oh, him.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't always walk around in his bathrobe with the little French fry McDonald's hat on. He used to wear a suit to work every day.
You know, one thing that I think is instructive about Unocal is that it's the poster child of a rotten company. And they're not the only one out there. They just happen to be the one that was in my neck of the woods. This is a corporation that was not afraid to do things that other companies weren't foul enough to avoid. I hope I put that right. So, you know, I'll tell you what the kind of stuff they did as refiners is that they refined gasoline out of what I believe it's called bunker C oil. It's like sludge. You know, it's in the bottom of the tanker when they pump out all the good stuff. This is the junk that's left. And so these people would buy it real cheap, and they would refine gasoline out of it. It took more work. And part of the result of this was that they were spilling all kind of garbage into the bay. They had accidents, you know. And if you look at the way they do business in Central Asia, it's the same kind of thing. They're doing things that other companies, you know, are too decent to want to get involved with, you know, nasty deals with, you know, with warlords.
Oh, sure. You know, look, the whole thing is tied up in, I mean, it's like I said earlier, it's oil, it's media, it's grocery store chains.
Yeah.
It's the fact that the Afghani opium lords have become so brazen that they're literally putting the names of the factories and making little brand names for themselves on their opium bricks and their heroin packages when they ship them to New York.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this is the corporatization and globalization, Richard, of darn near just about everything.
Just about everything. Well, I'm thinking about Clear Channel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, sure. Clear Channel, Premier. There's a couple of others that come to mind. The relaxation of the media ownership rules. If you want to come down and find a place where a lot of this begins, it's the changes in the FCC. It's the deregulation of the FCC and the elimination of the Fairness Doctrine during the Reagan presidency. The elimination of the Fairness Doctrine is the only way that Rush Limbaugh was able to come into existence.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd that work?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you remember growing up on, you know, I mean, even, you know, even in New York or wherever, you know, the general manager would come on and say, "Oh, we believe there is a problem with the water main at 53rd and blah, blah, blah."
Yeah.
And there was always a crackpot. And at the end of the editorial, it said, you know, "If you have an opposing valid viewpoint, please contact us at blah, 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 and we'll put you on the air." And there's always a crackpot to say, you know, "I like my busted water main in the summer," you know, that kind of thing. That died with the Fairness Doctrine. So when the Fairness Doctrine went, then radio stations in particular were free to program, and because the right wing had built the infrastructure for it, Richard, a long time before your Cato Institutes and your Heritage Foundations and your American Enterprise Institute and Competitive Enterprise Institute and all these right-wing freak organizations were sitting there ready with what literally turned out to be a media putsch. Okay, and yeah. Suddenly it wasn't just Rush Limbaugh; it was Michael Savage, and it was all these goonies that were funded by the right. And the next thing you know, you can't get an opposing viewpoint on the air, and the government no longer mandates that you do so.
Correct. And these guys were all coming out of an outlet here that was owned by ABC. And I forget their call letters right now, but you know what wound up was we probably have, let me think, I'm just thinking, we probably have about 16 frequencies owned by Clear Channel that I can pick up.
Well, you know, if you want to really get a good handle on it, Richard, the handiest way to do it is to go to radioandrecords.com. You know, that's mm-hmm. the industry magazine, just like Variety is for Hollywood. And there is a tab there that says ratings or Arbitron. And you can go market by market by market, and it will tell you the principal ownership of every single station.
Okay.
And you can go to New York, you can go to Frisco, you can go to L.A., and you will see Clear Channel, Clear Channel, Clear Channel, Clear Channel, right. Clear Channel.
But I'll tell you the funny thing. Clear Channel actually wound up owning too much.
Oh, yeah, they're losing some share price.
And guess whose transmitter Air America comes out of right here?
Oh, I don't doubt it. The Clear Channel station is the Air America flagship for Denver.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Last I checked, Clear Channel's picked up a bunch of Air America programming around the country because it's good to have that chunk of the market. Richard, we've got to roll on. Thanks for the great conversation. I do appreciate it.
Okay. See you, Bob.
Take care now.
Bye.
You know, and that's kind of what we're up against. That's why we're doing this on the Internet, because this is the one thing that Clear Channel can't get to as long as there's something approaching neutrality on the net. Thanks to everybody all of you, every last one of you, who made this Wednesday night that felt like a Monday night so very enjoyable for me, and I hope as much so for you. I've still got a bunch of prayer meeting stuff left over. We may have to hit that tomorrow. Who knows? We'll be talking with Mike Callahan tomorrow night. Mike is the second district congressional candidate here in West Virginia. If anybody in America deserves to have their race nationalized, it is Mike Callahan, because he is running against one of the nastiest, bush-lickinest, ugliest, filthiest Republicans in the entire Congress, Shelley Moore Capito, so filthy, in fact, that she was Tom DeLay's best girl. Tom DeLay gave her more of his dirty money than everybody except one human being in Congress. That should say something about the help that Mike Callahan both needs and deserves. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my darling wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. Our engineer is John Fox in Sydney, Australia, chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org maintains the streams and the archives of this and all the other programs on the Head On Radio Network, as well as several other fine liberal talk programming. He is the hardest working man in liberal talk and has earned it every day for several years now. He's got a fundraiser going on. You know what to do. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida.